Hey everybody, it's 2014, and this is Boss Barrel Radio 2013 Games Travaganza Doe DCM Remix Mega Deluxe List 2000 billion plus games to talk about, because it's beyond the end of the year, and that means it's time to reflect upon the great things that happened in 2013. I am Griffin Hoffman, and with me is Jeff Brewer.
Hello.
And Jamie Scherer.
Hi!
Hey, guys. So, 2013 is over and done with. Let's celebrate it by talking about some... by giving out some fake awards that people don't really give out. Except for only us.
Let us be clear that if you win one of these awards and you would like to use the Boss Barrel logo on your box...
yeah.
Contact James Scherer at... an address that you can find on the internet, and $10,000
$10,000-somethings. We don't want to commit to anything yet.
You will be informed in the response email what you will be providing $10,000 of.
Mm-hmm.
just be ready.
Buyer beware.
Stuff.
Well, we're here to talk about some games in an ordered, a civilized. Very profound manner as we reflect as luminaries of the video game world.
But this is a New Year's celebration, so shouldn't at least one person be incredibly inebriated? Like embarrassingly so.
Well, I have a tie on my head and no pants on, so is that good enough?
We need like people who are attending this event whom we interview and then like try to awkwardly make out with on camera.
Your cats.
We should have a cat panel guesting on this.
Are you nominating Puka for sluttiest moment of 2013?
Sluttiest indoor moment.
Oh.
Sluttiest outdoor moment is Joel, but we'll get to that.
Clearly. So let's run down the category list that we have here. The game topic awards that we'll be handing out this year will be Worst Mess of 2013, Best Writing / Story, Best New Pokemon, Best Kickstarter Success Story, Best Music, 2012 Game of the Year, Best Villain, Best Moment, Best Ending, Best Trend, Best Game That Nobody Here Played.
that's go on.
That'll be a short one, because we're all experts on that. And then finally, Game of the Year of 2013. Keep in mind that just to be nominated is quite an honor. We will go through these and we'll make some hard cuts, and we'll come out with a pared down list of winners, being one winner and two runners up, the runners up having no order, just being not winners,
okay,
but also not losers.
Harsh.
Yeah, it's cutthroat.
Harsh but fair.
That's right.
That's what they say about my judging.
They say one shall stand and two shall fall.
At least. At a minimum.
Mm-hmm. Most definitely. So let's start it out here. 2013 had some hairy moments. Let's talk about the worst mess of 2013. On our list, we have Aliens Colonial Marines.
Oof,
SimCity 2013. Always On Messaging by Microsoft. The VGXs. Nintendo. Broken Age. Next Gen Console Launches. And NAC.
All right. The Let's Play targeting was that last one right there.
Okay. Oh, okay. Let's Play.
Like the YouTube Let's Play shutdown that's been sweeping across.
Okay. So crackdown on digital video services.
Yes.
All right. Let's see here. Is there anything? Well, I guess where to start?
Well, what's your? I'll tell you my initial thought in terms of like, what is the worst of these?
Okay, great. So everybody can go around and see what their pick is for the number one most egregious moment of 2013.
Yeah.
Love it.
So if we're going in terms of potential financial damage to the people involved, I'm going to have to say it's either between the always-on messaging from Microsoft or Aliens Colonial Marines. I think those are the two that are probably the most potentially damaging in terms of money and how much they cost to clean up or how much they take away from the company.
Okay.
I think that the messaging is going to cost Microsoft some early momentum. I think that it really hurt them out the gate. I mean, you know, they're not winning in sales right now, which, you know, what does that mean? But I think that cost them a lot of money to clean up. They had to really adjust their strategy afterwards. I think also with Aliens Colonial Marines, there's a lot of proof that it was a big, like, boondoggle, and they wasted a lot of money on it. It was a huge flop, got a lot of attention.
Right. Not just in terms of the game being a flop, but the lawsuit that happened because of it, Sega taking Gearbox to task
mm-hmm.
for outsourcing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Really putting a blemish on that company.
I think in terms of financial damage, I think those two seem to be pretty high. Although Nintendo, just in general, the Wii U has been pretty damaging too.
Yeah. I put Nintendo on this list because I think Nintendo did a lot of dumb shit this year.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think, you know, as you're saying, as we have another category or a potential candidate here, a nominee, YouTube doing its crackdown on Let's Play videos, and Nintendo kind of being one of the biggest, kind of having its biggest hand in, one of the biggest hands in that pot.
Mm-hmm.
Them having going through that, almost maybe even unknowingly doing that stuff. Let's see, what was some other boondoggle issues that they had when they shut down the North America branch and had Iwata assume control of it.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe definitely not the best decision.
Well, just their barren release calendar for the Wii U. I mean, it's just been disastrous for them, mm-hmm. and that's mm-hmm. that console's not moving at all.
Mm-hmm.
And just to distinguish with the Let's Play issue, yes, Nintendo's been involved. It's kind of become more of a Google thing. I don't know if you've been following the recent developments, but Google has changed their policies about how stuff gets flagged.
Mm-hmm.
And now, like any company, can pretty easily like flag something, right. And even if they don't own the content, it stops getting monetized. And it, like, at least when the system was initially rolled out, it was like really hitting a lot of really big YouTubers.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
People who'd been given permission to monetize their videos were not able to do so.
I've read some articles too where there has been some people saying some content owners, like the initial content owners, saying, I want this to be available for free use for anybody. And then YouTube kind of responding back like, well, what? You can't do that. Like, it's your right. Or, you know, a third party that's representing this person saying, no, you need to make a claim on this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I don't know. I mean, these all seem pretty big. And VGX was, like, probably the most uncomfortable.
But you guys loved the VGX. Like, I didn't watch it. But after you guys watched it and you were talking to me about it, it sounded like it was an improvement.
I think VGX is a mess and completely a complete train wreck. But not disgusting. Like, it was also never not enjoyable to be watching it. Like, never... Mm. And it already is such a dog and pony show that it's like, well, you know, it's just Jump the Shark again, and now it's there are no commercials except for.
Can I just say that Nintendo actually has their fingers in a lot of these pots? For example, in the VGX, Nintendo's big reveal was Cranky Kong.
Yeah.
In one of the games,
right?
And as far as next gen launches go, I mean, look at the Wii U.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then they were clearly. Sorry, go ahead, Jamie.
You go ahead and you finish.
I was going to say they were clearly implicated in the Let's Player business on YouTube. Yeah. So
I feel like I want to explain next-gen launches a little bit. I put that one up there. And I put it up there not because they weren't, at least for PlayStation and Xbox, they were successful. But for me, it's just kind of, they're not grabbing my attention the way I thought they would. And I feel like my excitement before the launch And my fervent disappointment after.
Jamie, can I make... No, keep going. Please go.
I was just going to say, they haven't really convinced me that they're going to bring anything new or special with this new group of things. And, it's the first year, and, it'll probably take at least five before I say to myself, hey, this is a pretty cool system. But at least with the – I remember with PlayStation 3 going into Best Buy or whatever, looking at the graphics and being like, huh, it's pretty cool. But even the graphics for these new things, it's like, eh. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. It's kind of a – but that's actually not my vote. Okay. But Griff, you wanted to say something before
I was just going to say that I made an addendum to your next-gen launches, and I tabbed on their launch window bullshit or bullshit. Because I think that's part of the problem. You know, we lost Watch Dogs. We kind of lost Infamous Second Son. The Xbox's most anticipated title is Titanfall. The launch window for the Wii U, I think, may have ended this year.
I think it ended in September or October when Wonderful 101
came out. When Smash Bros. Come out, we'll know it's over. So I think this weird extending of what we consider a launch is hurting has hurt this next generation launch.
They bought my pre-order with Watch Dogs.
Yeah,
then,
mine too.
Oops, not getting that anymore. And not because necessarily the game is bad for next-gen consoles, but more because we have Assassin's Creed coming out, and we don't want to pollute the market with our own games. So you're going to have to wait a little bit for that one.
Yeah, I mean, it's like we get these things and, there's not really any really compelling software. And, it's like the excitement goes from frenzied to just utterly tepid because there's just nothing. And you're right, it's not hugely different graphically from the last generation. I think we all notice a difference, but
there's a difference. And graphics card from 2011 can completely dominate my my new console.
And from all accounts, some of the unique functionality of the Xbox One with its TV integration and Kinect support, those things just weren't really realized or done as well as they were shown off to do. I mean, PlayStation suffers similarly with its standby mode and the Gaikai illusion,
Yeah, and it's a tough time because it's just nothing's happening right now. Everyone is everyone's on holiday, everyone's doing their thing, and these consoles are just sitting there in our living rooms or whatever, collecting dust. And we're what are we supposed to do with these things?
The most exciting thing to look forward to is a game that came out last year.
Or how about Don't Starve coming out tomorrow? That's going to turn things around.
That's what I was referencing. Yeah, Don't Starve.
The one you can get on Steam right now
for 33 cents probably.
Yeah.
So all this talk is making me actually think that the next gen launches should be my choice. But my choice actually is, I believe, the Let's Play fiasco. And my reason for that is that the internet and YouTube is the only way in this day and age that I have to figure out about new games. And it's not infrequent that I'm curious about some new game and I'll scan all my favorite websites that I love, Polygon, Giant Bomb, Joystick, Detroit, I'll scan all of them and they won't have a single article or even a mention of said game. And my choice is to go to YouTube and watch some rando guy from Germany play the game. And it's I feel like if they're cracking down on that, it's going to be harder to discover new games.
Yeah.
And I don't know what this trend will bring in the future. If it will continue to get more difficult to, watch extended play footage of games.
Mm-hmm. And this, I disagree about the Let's Play issues. And I have talked about this quite a bit. And I think Let's Players being upset that they are not able to monetize their accounts can get over it. If you are working with YouTube and you are using something that may potentially be a third party infringement of rights, then you know what? You need to figure out something else. And people will figure out something else. Maybe stop using YouTube as your service.
I do. I understand your position, Griffin, because I think you're coming from it like from a very rational perspective. I guess the angle that maybe Jamie and to some extent me are taking is like, well, yeah, they could get over it. You know, YouTube can do whatever the hell they want. You know, it's a privilege that they get to be on here. But I don't know why there's such a strong push to do it. I guess I don't know where the pressure is coming from, because it really ultimately, I think, hurts the developers. It hurts the people who are trying to move software.
Yes.
So yeah, they can get over it. But, you know, there's nothing wrong with them. Like, it's a privilege that they can monetize. But the fact that they do monetize actually is financially beneficial to a lot of people. So it's not like it's a bad thing that they do it. It's not like we should feel like, oh, these people are so privileged, you know, don't give them your sympathy. I mean, even if you don't want to give these people your sympathy, you could say that it's troubling because, you know, as Jamie said, how are we going to find out about stuff? You know,
yeah.
That's where I disagree. Like, I think that there will always be people on the internet showing off things either legally or illegally of stuff that you may not, you know, have immediate access to. Those will always exist. It may be a little bit more tricky, but, you know, people who are getting paid by YouTube to provide content on YouTube, like, if you're not, If somebody is challenging your claim to it and you cannot present a case that this is like original content, then you shouldn't get paid for it.
Mm-hmm. I'm not so worried. I'm not even worried about the paying. And I think I actually agree with you about the paying. I'm just worried about the trend itself and where this will go, where this, like, what will this morph into?
Yeah.
This year it's preventing them from getting paid. 2 years from now, 3 years from now, is it going to be preventing them from, like, putting up footage of these games at all, unless it's through some sanctioned source like Twitch for PS4 games? So that's more what I'm thinking about. And that's why it's my personal pick.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I'm trying to decide. I mean, I guess
I see that as it's dangerous, but there have been things that have been done a lot worse this year than that. Like, it hasn't hit the fan at the moment. Like, it's bad, but I can still put my videos up on YouTube and people can still watch them. No problem.
I would say maybe we're not all in agreement yet that's a number one, but at least it remains compelling. So we're not ready to ditch it yet.
Right.
Is there anything on here that we can kind of all agree, you know, like, yeah, it was bad, but maybe it wasn't so bad.
I'm going to take out the VGXs because I think we
just
said
it was so bad.
It was so bad, but it was also not unexpected.
Okay.
I put Knack on there just because I personal disappointment. You can get rid of that.
I don't even see it on here. Oh, there it is. Okay.
That's right, yeah. What about SimCity 2013?
Well, SimCity 2013, I think, deserves to be on this list because because of SimCity 13, Gearbox kind of got away with some of how shitty Aliens Colonial Marines was. Mm. Like, SimCity 2013 came out right as at the same time Colonial Marines was, and SimCity 13 was just critically lauded as being this, like, fantastic new revival for a series, doing all these cool new things, integrating multiplayer in fascinating new ways. And then when it came out, its online functionality, which was a mandatory, always online thing that was baked into the design of the game, just didn't work. Servers weren't supporting it. It had to be functionality of the game had to be ripped out of it the last minute to make it a stable thing. It just completely has soured the brand of SimCity. Like, what are they going to do now? SimCity 14?
They're doing another one, like a future one or something.
I mean, what kind of game can you release after you revive the brand once? Like, they've tainted their waters for some time.
And there was a lot of messaging from EA that was somewhat disingenuous, like the fact that it relied heavily upon online and it was impossible to play the game without online.
Right.
And then, of course, people patched it so you could play it without online.
Yeah. And so, I mean, you know, this is where I kind of have to, you know, say I can give some on this, and it's I didn't play it. So, but what I've heard is you it does require multiple players because of city size. You know, you cannot have a successful city unless you have neighboring cities to support your economy in other ways, and you can't run those other cities. Other players have to. So you are hindered by the game's own design and its own failings. Mm.
Can we say that any like that in the case, I guess, of SimCity 2013 or Colonial Marines, are either of those like profoundly bad enough that they will like are they bad enough to be the worst mess of the year, and that they like will forever affect the trajectory of those companies, of something greater than just themselves? I'm wondering if the missteps with Microsoft and the missteps with Nintendo are maybe bigger because they influence the direction of hardware developers, you know, these big people who have major stakes in, you know, where the industry goes.
Yes.
I agree with you.
I think that Aliens Colonial Marines has put this blemish on Gearbox, and SimCity 2013 has kind of sunk Maxis, or I guess it's Maxis, right?
I mean, it's basically EA.
Yeah.
But yes, Maxis.
You know,
I changed my vote to Nintendo.
Because I might put mine there too. Go on, James.
Because they had the chance to capitalize on the intense popularity they had and like really blow games into like a totally new dimension in terms of like the people, like the audiences they could reach. They had like a chance to get people involved in games that would never be involved in games in a meaningful way.
Yeah.
And they just can't. They just can't do it. And it's infuriating.
I mean, we can argue about when they blew it, since the Wii has been kind of dead for several years now, but they definitely blew it in a big way on the Wii U.
Jamie, do you want to talk a bit about Broken Age? Do you want to make Broken Age?
I don't want to make a case for Broken Age because I don't. I'll argue against Broken Age. So if someone else wants to argue for Broken Age as being the biggest disaster of the year, I will try to argue against that. But
just summarize, but, yeah.
I mean, since you followed it more closely than we did, but it kind of goes hand in hand with like some of the Kickstarter drama that was happening, mm-hmm. kind of last year and or I guess 2012 and some of 2013.
I don't think any of us think it's worse. I don't think any of us realistically think Broken Age is the worst mess of the year, but I think it's worthwhile just to kind of go over what happened.
Mm-hmm. I'm angry at them that I thought that when I invested in them, I was investing in a company of people that like had the experience to foresee some of these problems that are debilitating them, and that they would, you know, be professional and produce. And what I get are like 6 months of videos of them deciding like what the music should be like, and then nothing. And then like, you know, it takes them like a year to write an adventure game, which he was originally planning on developing, writing everything in 4 months. It's like, I just feel like I don't know. Disillusioned.
Yeah,
I agree with you, Jamie. I think it's less of like a huge mess. Is it's more of just like it's a shame. It's like it's a wag of the finger at Tim Schafer, going like you could do better.
Mm. I think it more than anything just makes the case for producers and publishers.
It really does. And, you know, they even say in the episodes, he says multiple times, you know, if I were under the pressure of a company, like I would have made these painful decisions that I'm delaying making.
You know? Why did you do this on Kickstarter, you bastard?
what was the name of the dude who's doing the voice for the main character that came out during the VGAs or VGXs? The Hobbit,
Elijah Wood?
Frodo? Yeah, Elijah Wood. Was that something that we already knew? Because I feel like that was something we already knew.
No, we didn't know it.
Okay.
Yeah, that was a VGX reveal. They had Jack Black already.
Yeah.
Yeah, they had Jack Black.
But I think Elijah was brand new.
Right. And other people like the Star Trek guy that everyone loves, Will Wheaton. We had him.
Right. Maybe I just blend them into the same person.
Possible.
Yeah, but I don't think anyone thinks that's the worst thing of the year, really. But you know, it definitely it definitely took some of the shine off of Kickstarter. And, you know, it was important, and I think there's a reason it's on this list, even if it's not anywhere near the worst thing on it. Just because it was important.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, no, it's definitely far from the worst of the year. Are we kind of in agreement that maybe Aliens, Colonial Marines, and SimCity 2013 aren't really the worst of the year either, even though they were kind of the most publicized?
Yep.
Yeah. Maybe.
I'm gonna highlight them in any speak now or forever hold your peace. I'm gonna read them.
The only reason I say no is because I disagree with YouTube issues with video streaming let's plays. And I feel like that's where we're going.
Oh, we're not going there. I don't think we're going there. I think we might be going to Nintendo.
Yeah, I'm kind of
that's where I'm going.
I'm between next in launches Nintendo and the Uplay, but I think between the three, Uplay.
Uplay is just a disaster. It just transcends time and space.
I want to talk to you guys about Microsoft's console messaging of it's always on.
Let's talk about it.
Was the worst fucking boondoggle of 2013.
Tell me more.
Okay, so this saga that happened this year, like this when Sony announces their console or when Sony's like, we're going to wait for Microsoft, and then bam, they have their press conference in January or February, whenever it is. And then all these rumors getting thrown around, and then finally you have this like weird Twitter fight with nobody, with this Microsoft employee saying, well, you know, everything's already online. You should
cleaners.
Just embrace it. Yeah. Do you get mad at your vacuum cleaner if the electricity goes out in your house? No, that's crazy. Or, well, what about people who live in smaller cities that don't have the infrastructure of internet like we do on the West Coast and the East Coast? Well, maybe they should move to a different location. Like that stuff, this one man saying this stuff, God. And then saying like it's always online, deal with it. Like to have that as before you can even, you know, create a sort of corporate design around that, you have this idiot going out there and kind of stealth launching this information, which I think actually ended up being beneficial.
I would say so. All the negative feedback they got in the lead up to their, you know, kind of non-reveal, probably informed their decision-making process.
I'm going
to
take out the always online messaging because I think that their whole console launch has been a disaster.
Okay.
You go from that.
Indies as well. I mean, they didn't really do anything to win them over. I mean, they've been late to the party on everything.
Well, they've been late to the party, but very late.
It
hasn't even been late to the party. It's been backtracking. I mean, to say, okay, our device is going to be always online. It does need to have an internet connection. It does need to have a Kinect connected to it. It comes in the box. It won't start unless you have it. And hey, it's not going to play used games.
Yeah.
And then fucking Sony getting out of E3 and sticking that knife in there saying, our console plays used games.
But here's the question. Is that worse than the Wii U? Like, it's hard to say because we don't really fully know what the fallout is of Microsoft's moves yet. We know that the Wii U is selling horribly, worse than the GameCube was.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And we know that Nintendo's not really doing anything to fix it, or as far as I know. You know, they released NES Remix.
That looked pretty good.
It looked okay. I mean, you know, I like the idea, although it looked like the actual challenges weren't that great. But, like, I guess my question is, what company finds itself in a worse position right now? And it's actually a pretty complex question because, you know, Nintendo obviously...
okay, well...
The Wii U's doing horribly, but they have a huge cash reserve. Microsoft, you know, Xbox One last generation for the most part. I mean, maybe the Wii One in terms of console sales, but, you know, I mean, however, you know, they don't have the kind of cash that Nintendo's sitting on.
Yeah, no, so, well, that's not right. I mean, if you want to compare, if you want to bring, like, you know, monetary value of companies into the mix, then I think Microsoft, you know, it becomes a lot more complicated because their operating system, because they're more than just the games company. And Microsoft as a company that develops games has kind of almost, you know, dwindled away to nothing at this point. So it's kind of apples and oranges. And Nintendo,
that's true.
You're saying Nintendo, if we put Nintendo on this list, we're saying there are like 8 issues packed into what Nintendo has done. With Microsoft, it's specifically how they tried to launch their new generation of consoles.
Well, I would propose that maybe instead of Nintendo, we say Wii U, because, you know, look at the year end. I mean, they wanted to sell 9 million of these things. They sold nothing close to that. I don't know the exact figure, but it's, you know, it's incredibly horrible sales numbers. And, you know, like I said, this November, they sold less than the GameCube sold.
Yeah.
I mean, isn't that more of a debacle than shitty messaging from Microsoft?
I don't think so, because if you go to anybody right now and you talk to the average person and you say, oh, the Xbox One, isn't that a weird thing that happened? They say, yeah, that sucks that you can't play games on it. Fuck that console. I'm getting a PlayStation. Or,
yeah, but then you're what about the Wii U? And they're like, what's that?
Well, okay, yeah. you have vehemence and you have, you know, apathetic. Yeah, so.
Yeah.
But apathetic is more like disappointing because of where they were coming from, to me.
I mean, it's a question of which was like the greatest indignity and which was like the greatest, biggest problem.
Dropping the ball.
So I think it's clear that like in the case, and we could even break this into two things. Like it's clear that the greatest indignity was probably Microsoft. They were the most like obviously offensive and terrible in their initial messaging.
I mean, okay, you know, the messaging continued too at E3 when Don Matrick gets on stage and they say, "Hey, for you gamers who don't have a connection to the internet, we have a product for you. It's called the Xbox 360." Like what the hell is that about? And then to go to a point where now they say, "Okay, you don't need the Kinect attached to it anymore. It plays games. It also eats them, and then it doesn't need to be online, except it requires a day one patch through the internet to be playable." Like what is that company even doing?
I think this touches on it. I mean, the one that is the most infuriating is Microsoft. The one that is, I think, the most possibly damaging is the Wii U, because I think, at least in the case of the Xbox One, they can walk back a lot of the horrible crap they did. They've got this console that is roughly equivalent to the PS4. Yes, the graphics card is like 40% less powerful, whatever. Mm-hmm. But, you know, they're going to be multi-platform games for both. They're going to score some exclusives. They're going to be, you know, typical Microsoft dicks and pressure some people into being on their platform, whatever they need to do. I guess it's too soon to say what's going to happen to them. But in terms of like who's the most fucked, I think the Wii U is clearly the most fucked.
Okay, well, I think the counterpoint to that then is when you say, okay, Nintendo has the possibility of turning things around. They did it with the 3DS. They made some hard cuts. They beefed up their library considerably. They got interesting third-party games on board with it. And now it's one of the most successful devices of last year. So, I mean, there's hope for Nintendo. I think right now there's less hope for Microsoft. Microsoft has, like, they have solidified themselves as the villains, and they're less of, like, your bro buddies who just want to play games. Nintendo is still this kind of, like, bumbling, goofy, adorable little company that has your best buddies on it.
But they can't even sell Mario games anymore.
Yeah, that's the thing.
That's
like,
true.
3D World didn't move. Yeah, go ahead, Jamie.
That's all I was going to say. It's like at least Xbox has its eternal bros that will die clutching their Xbox One.
No, there are a million times more people who will clutch their Nintendo garbage till the grave than there are Microsoft.
Not if you look at the sales numbers, though.
It seems to me Nintendo is even like it, that game is incredible. It's a fabulous game. It was well reviewed. It's beautiful. It's eye-catching. I don't know what happened. Why didn't it sell like gangbusters? Like, that's to me why Nintendo wins this category.
Yeah, because, I've been turning it down.
That should be the definition of failure. When Nintendo can't move one of the best Mario games it's ever made, it's like, that's designed for multiplayer play? In like this multiplayer age, it's like it's infuriating.
can we just use that soundbite throughout the rest of the episode?
Yes.
Okay. This is if we can come to some consensus on what we define as Nintendo's mess, that includes it kind of being the standard bearer of the Let's Play fiasco. I'm happy with that winning then.
Okay, so we can just say...
So if we put as much shit under Nintendo's umbrella, I'm happy with that, taking it from Microsoft. Because Microsoft is the worst. But if you want to pack enough garbage in there with Nintendo,
so
I'm okay.
This is the most like emotional I've seen you towards Microsoft in all of our podcasting together.
Yeah.
Usually you're so much more level-headed.
This is because Microsoft, it's retarded. It is the definition of it.
It just feels so odd because I've always thought of myself as a bit of a fanboy, and I find myself on the opposite side of it. It's such an interesting dynamic to be in.
Okay,
but yeah, I think my vote still goes to Nintendo. We can definitely lump the Let's Play chip in there.
Okay, if we want to say Nintendo's failure, if the worst mess of 2013 was Nintendo, and I guess I did leave that ambiguous when I wrote it down there, but if we want to say it was like the decisions of Nintendo regarding third party,
I'm going to add it as you talk.
Okay, third party content. We want to say lack of support for Wii U, and. I don't know. What else we got? Like, maybe brand stagnation. I mean, I think if you want to say what was the problem with Mario this year, it's what Mario
they
was it?
They poured him out, yeah.
There's been so many Marios.
Yeah, yeah. I think you're right, Griffin. It's a company where I thought their IPs would never get stale. They're starting to feel a little bit stale because they're overdoing them so much.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
They need a major change of direction.
I'm gonna pick our runners up here in magenta.
Definitely, I think that both of these are enough of like an impassioned or like a passionate thing that they should both be represented somewhere.
Yeah.
So
we've knocked too many off the list here. We need a third.
Oh, we need a third.
There's one winner and two.
What do we want for number three? I was being good on cutting stuff out.
You want to just put it as VGX? I'm okay with just put it there.
Do it.
I think that we both have strong opinions about Aliens, Colonial Marines, and SimCity 2013. Both have damaged both products and companies, but did they affect us personally? Not particularly.
No. Yeah, I think we can put VGX on there. Sure, why not? What the hell?
Yeah. If it means okay, if you want to say if you want to say the VGX could have done something interesting and could have made this transitioning from television to web a little bit more interesting, like focusing more on awards and talking to developers and less of this fucking like two-person stand-up comedy bit. so they had an opportunity to make something great with the transition, and it was completely destroyed.
Yes. Also, they hated each other so much.
But it was so good. Okay, so worst mess of 2013 is going to be Nintendo, specifically their lack of support for the Nintendo Wii U, brand stagnation for the first party products, and them being one of the major proponents of third party content removal off streaming online video services.
Sweet.
Great.
We did it.
Suck it, Nintendo. Good job.
We love you.
I love Nintendo. It's probably one of my favorite companies of all time.
Is it you?
Pains me to award that.
Yeah. You love them, but you expect better.
Exactly.
That brings us to the next category here, best writing / story.
I'm just going to go ahead and say that Metal Gear Rising is funny, but I'd never finished the game, but I find that very difficult to believe that it had the best story of 2013.
We also have The Last of Us. We also have Fire Emblem Awakening. We have Grand Theft Auto V. We have Gone Home. We have Brothers. We have The Stanley Parable. And we have Machinarium.
Go ahead, Jamie.
So, Jeff, you're calling for an immediate cut of Dead Rising.
No, I mean, Metal Gear Rising.
Because I played about 10 minutes of that game, and I agree. I mean, I basically, there was a giant robot and I sliced it up. I don't know if a story can happen around that.
You love Evangelion.
Yeah.
I do love Evangelion.
How many giant robots get sliced up in Evangelion? At least one in the first episode.
Yeah, but they get sliced up because, like, an enemy with giant arms that are paper slices through them.
Delicious edible paper. I put Metal Gear Rising on this list because I think that there is some good writing, especially with the last boss fight. The translation by 8-4 is excellent, and it is big, stupid, dumb Platinum Games kind of craziness, and then that wrapped around with, like, Kojima, Konami, absolute paranoia, bullshit, war economy, insanity.
Nanomachines.
There, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, no, I loved the campiness of it. I don't think we could, in good conscience, give it the best of the year, but okay. I definitely thought it was amazingly campy.
Cut it, he says.
That's what I say.
Cut it.
As much as I like it.
Fine.
I'm sorry.
Cut it.
I hear the pain in your heart.
All right, obviously, nobody is going to disagree that The Last of Us should not be on this list.
Yeah. Early pick for me, I will admit.
Yeah. Grand Theft Auto 5, I put on this list because I think Trevor's writing was very good. Otherwise, it's pretty much just like, if you like that Rockstar, like, dick joke humor, and you like that American satire stuff, it's all still there. It's all still good. It's just getting a little tired now.
Yeah. What I understand about, and again, I didn't play it, unfortunately, but what I understand about GTA is that it was kind of the kind of satire that's just like, hey, look, like, this is a stereotype. Get it?
Yeah.
Well, I think more so than any other game, this one has evolved that, where there's not just, like, Grand Theft Auto 4, like, Brucey, like, I'm this macho guy who loves doing push-ups, and I have muscles and whatnot. Like, you don't have that kind of complete black and white. You have a little bit more gray with the three main characters. Mm-hmm. But it's still just, I don't think it's that great.
Yeah, I think we all kind of agree there that you know, it's got some good stuff going on with right. Trevor, like you said, but, you know, it's GTA.
Yep. Hey, it's still GTA.
I think Gone Home will be an interesting one to talk about.
Yeah.
Jamie, you want to chime in on Gone Home? What did you think of the story in Gone Home?
I thought it was great.
I thought it was great too.
I don't know really how to argue for it.
Let's then move on, because I think that okay. That okay, stays. Well,
yeah, that stays for now.
What about Brothers? This one I disagree with.
I put it in there. I think Brothers' strength is that obviously there is no spoken word in Brothers, but it is a story that doesn't have words, and it does a great job of being a story that doesn't have words, and that's pretty cool. I think that it has moments of awkwardness, which probably prevent it from being number one, but it has some strong emotional beats. Does a really good job of setting up its world. It does a good job, like I said, of delivering story without words, and that's pretty cool to
me. Yeah, and I think that it's really interesting what they did with the, so you know these characters' names, because they are mouthing them, and they say the same syllables over and over again when they call each other. And you can tell by the inflection of the voice actors what they're talking about. But you don't necessarily have to know the specifics, but they're still conveying these ideas and these emotions. And I think that that's really awesome, that they can tell the story with just one pseudo language of monosyllabic, just like grunts. And it's still, there's so much weight behind it for me.
Yeah, it takes some balls. I mean, I think it's not perfect, but it definitely takes some balls. And they pretty much realized it, and I think it doesn't – I put it on there because I don't think it gets enough credit for what it has to offer in that department. And, you know, it's just somewhat of an underappreciated game. So I just wanted to kind of recognize that even though it's not traditionally kind of written in the way that we might expect with dialogue, it's still good.
Yeah, there's nothing like unique about it. It's like an age-old fable, and it really doesn't break from that. I don't know. It doesn't break from that sort of tradition. There's like a very predictable temptress, and then there's a somewhat predictable death. And
yeah,
but
extraordinarily
within that kind of
from the beginning of the video game, from
I think
literally
within that frame,
the start when you're staring at a grave.
But if you can evoke the kind of emotions that at least have evoked in me when it is that predictable and that archetypical, then I feel like that is something special in and of itself.
Yeah, I agree. And maybe we don't put it in the hallowed halls, but
yeah.
But it's there because, you know, it does something. It definitely achieves something special in telling this story without having to rely on words, I thought.
And I'll say that I think that I disagree. I think it was obvious. I think it was gimmicky. I think it was nonsensical in its world and design. And I never have any problem playing it, but that doesn't matter. I just think that everything was it was clear from the start that this was going to happen. This is like the Last Guardian trailer of the dog bird and the boy, and you're like, well, one of those is going to die. You got two brothers; they're not going to both make it.
I didn't see it coming. probably why it hit me.
And you know, maybe I think this just maybe my own like bias here, where I'm saying like part of the hype that I heard about this game that brought me back to it was like maybe just not looking at it as somebody who didn't like go in with a pure kind of unexpecting, unjaded kind of perspective on this. And I think that I'm happy with leaving it right now because it's, you guys made a really good case for it. And I think that it's more of my own personal persuasion that, you know, I would not want it on here.
Okay. Yeah. We can come back to it and reassess once we pare it down a little more.
Like I would rather cut other games.
Okay. So did any of you guys play Stanley Parable at all? Freeware or paid version?
Yes.
Okay, you paid which one? Pay or free?
I played the one that came out this 2013 year.
Okay, so I think the thing about Stanley Parable is it's funny. You know, it's funny, and I didn't get to any of the touching endings. I've seen the touching endings in the, they're not really touching in the traditional way, but I've seen the more kind of poignant endings in the freeware version.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's interesting. I think it's well written in kind of a witty and clever way.
Yeah.
It's
funny, and it is making fun of game design in a very intelligent and nuanced way. That I don't think a lot of other games do. But in the same respect as Brothers, I think that gimmick wears thin incredibly quickly.
Yeah, I kind of feel the same way, and I would like to want to spend more time with Stanley Parable, and I'm sure I will see all the endings.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not the kind of game that really, I don't know, for whatever reason, it didn't, even though I was really enjoying all of the jokes and all of the humor and all of the kind of cleverness and intellectualness of it.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't keep me coming back with its writing, and I'm not sure why.
I think part of it is it does have really good writing. It's just not any fun to play. Yeah.
Yeah. Which is not really, that's outside of the confines of the category. Well, I mean, it's definitely well written. It's also just well cast.
Right. It's still a video game. So, yeah. I mean, if it's horrid to interact with, then degrades from it, from the product overall.
Okay. Did you play it at all, Jamie?
Stanley Parable? No.
Okay. Okay. So I don't know, Griffin, do you want to keep it or toss it? I mean, what is your thinking?
I can let that one go.
Okay. We can let it go.
If you just want to say, hey, it came out last year, technically, I mean, if that's just what soothes your conscience, I'm okay with that.
Just to make life a little bit easier.
I think we have a better list to deal with if that's off it.
Okay, let's talk. Do you want to talk Machinarium or Machinarium, Jamie?
Sure. I think that game is painfully charming. Neither of you guys have played it.
I own it on at least two different platforms, but
I've
not
watched
it
being played a couple times.
I think that game is extremely charming, and it tells a really compelling to me love story just using pictograms, basically. So whenever the characters talk to each other, they talk in little like drawings. And it's, you know, plays a role both in the actual story of the game and also, you know, if you're just talking to an ancillary character who's going to tell you how to solve a puzzle, he'll also just talk to you in little diagrams. And it really tells the story of a city, which is a relic of some former civilization, and you're trying to find your girlfriend robot in that city. And on the way, you encounter all of these like really kind of wondrous little scenes, and there's all sorts of amazing characters, and without having English, these characters have like these amazingly nuanced personalities and wants and desires, and I just thought it was a really cool little thing. I don't think it's even my pick for best writing, but I wanted to put it up there. And the reason why it's up there for 2013 is because it came out on the Vita in 2013, which I think is a fantastic platform to play it on. I was going to play it with my BlackBerry Playbook back in 2011. But,
you had a Playbook? I never knew.
No, I'm joking.
Okay, you bastard.
I'm just looking at what it was released for on Wikipedia. And it's really, it's short. It's the perfect length. Like right as like the mechanics and the story itself start wearing thin, it's over. It's a great little game.
Cool. Yeah, I think that's it's good to just kind of highlight stuff. But it sounds like maybe you don't want to put it in the top contending.
I might put it in the top three.
Okay.
But not the top one.
Okay, not the top one. Okay. So hey.
So
Fire
now
Emblem.
Our list Talk is The Last Emblem. Of Us, Fire Emblem Awakening, Gone Home, Brothers, Machinarium. I put Fire Emblem on this list because I think that the writing in it is fantastic. The character-to-character dialogue is the shining point of that game. The most interesting thing about that game is how the characters interact and the relationships that they build together. The literal writing itself is very good. The jokes are very fun. The love stories that happen are really enjoyable and not your typical like anime kind of nonsense, but they do have some gravity to them. Then again, there also is a lot of all that horse garbage.
Yeah, because Fire Emblem is a game that has like good localization, I feel like, but like the core story is shitty.
And
which
that's,
we all know.
That's the problem. The core story is inscrutable. Like complete. Speaking of Evangelion, like
child soldiers from the future.
Yeah, whew, buddy.
That game is all in favor of child soldiers.
So there goes another one of my child soldier games off the list.
Metal Gear Rising and Fire Emblem.
You guys have thwarted my agenda.
Was not the year of the child soldier.
Okay, I think that The Last of Us, Gone Home, and Brothers is a good list.
Now, I don't see Bioshock on here, and I want to talk to you guys about that, because I'm personally not a huge fan of Bioshock's writing, but I'm surprised that neither of you wanted to make a case for it.
Because I think that the story overall isn't that great.
Okay.
I think that it sags in the middle. It has some kind of bland characters. Its writing just kind of gets mangled with however that game turned out. And it has some really big moments and some really cool high points for like the roller coaster ride. But there is also just a bunch of nonsense in there.
Okay.
When was Bioshock released? Because this feels like a game that was written that year. And it's really proud of itself.
Like March 2013?
No, the original Bioshock.
Oh, 2006?
Something like that, right?
Seven?
Games have just moved on. This was the year of games finally being vague and mature and subdued and nuanced. And this game was none of those things. It's very proud of its themes, and it's very upfront with those themes, and it's very heavy-handed with those themes.
Also, if you want to say, the majority of the story was conveyed through fucking audio logs still.
a good story told in an antiquated way, and trying to convey themes that were conveyed equally good in the original Bioshock, or similar themes.
Yeah, because I mean, I feel kind of bad for Bioshock. It's a game that when I played it, I wasn't super into. I liked it, but I wasn't blown away by it. But I also feel like it's getting kind of short.
Well, I think it's a fantastic game, and it's definitely on my list for best of the year. But I just think that in terms of the writing, in terms of Ken Levine's writing, it just doesn't. I mean, everything else, the scenery, the feeling, like just playing the game is great. But the writing, I don't think can
Right.
Okay.
If you want to say that BioShock wins because it has an amazing opening like quarter and it has an amazing last like half hour, that's cool. But the writing overall, I think it just has such a saggy middle to it that it doesn't even merit being on here, especially compared with these other contenders.
Can I just say something? That's why I left my first wife, saggy middle.
I'm taking off Machinarium because I think this list is The Last of Us, Gone Home, and Brothers.
I'm down with that.
Okay.
I'm cool with that.
If you want to have one game that doesn't have English language spoken dialogue in it, then you could only have one.
You're the boss.
Damn it.
They pay you the big bucks.
I know you guys said you didn't feel good, or you were kind of confused about putting Gone Home on here, but I think Gone Home is all writing and story. Like, there's nothing else to that game but writing and story.
No, I love that. I love that it's there. I think it's fantastic. I think that it's so ballsy for them to make that game and have it be about those themes, knowing what the video game community is like. Yeah. And knowing what 4chan would do with this game, it's like it's such a triumph that it just was made and that it's a really solid game and that it got the acclaim it did and it addressed those themes and like somehow like survived the flame war that ensued.
Oh, you're talking about you're talking about the sexuality issues that are brought up in the game.
Yes,
one of the major as being one of the best parts. So yeah, I think that kind of fell by the wayside in compared to what the game did, and that's by purely giving you like story and literally no challenge, you are hooked, and that's what keeps you progressing through the game is that story and that next little discovery of information.
Yeah, I think it definitely wins most story or like most percentage story.
Yeah,
it is, and it's a great story, and it also it does a great job of using in-game objects, of using the world as another way of telling the story, using that book you find, that porno magazine you find buried under your dad's stack of unsold shitty sci-fi novels, mm-hmm. yeah. Like all this stuff to just really flesh out the world and really give it a lot of extra depth.
It's going to be that game that they're going to make students play 50 years from now when they're talking about this kind of stuff and they're going to like laugh at the graphics and laugh at lots of things about it, but they're going to like it. Because nothing like that, the actual mechanic and the story are going to hold up forever, mm-hmm. and that's like a rare thing for a game.
Yeah. I don't have. I definitely don't have any problem with it being on this list. I think it belongs here for sure. I just don't know, like where I think we're all kind of, I think it kind of goes between Last of Us and Gone Home in terms of story, and I think they're just bringing such different things to the table. I don't know how you would. I don't know how you would rank one above the other. It's so hard.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, I also think 50 years from now, if people still care, they'll be also playing The Last of Us. Just, I don't know how they couldn't. It's just so impeccably implemented, so, every little thing.
I think that what separates those two games is Gone Home had a very specific objective. They said, we want to create a game where exploration is key, where gameplay kind of doesn't really matter, like your interaction with it's kind of along the lines of like a point and click sort of missed adventure, but it is purely the hook of story that keeps people interested in this product, where I think The Last of Us takes story and meshes it so well with gameplay and game design by adding what Gone Home did and creating those lived in environments, but they did it on a massive scale that every game now will look back at The Last of Us and say, we need to have this in our game. Kind of like how every game looked back at BioShock and was like, audio logs, nothing greater than that.
Yeah, it definitely kind of set a standard. Yeah.
I don't think you can do Gone Home again.
I don't know. I mean, I think you might be able to do it again. It might not be as impactful, but I think that...
I don't think you can do it again, and I think that's a compliment. To that game.
Interesting. And I don't know how to feel, because I think The Last of Us is very like whole package, and I don't know if it's that it's greater than the sum of its parts or that all of its parts are just amazing. So I'm like, Gone Home is very, it's like, is all story, and Last of Us is more than just story, it's also like a good game. They're both such good stories, though. I don't know how to I don't know how to rank one over the other. Do either of you have a thought about which you think is just better?
I think The Last of Us is a superior story and has superior writing.
What do you think, Jamie? Do you have any thoughts?
I don't think The Last of Us has superior writing or story, but I think The Last of Us... I think The Last of Us wins. I don't know why.
What if I said, Jamie, this is what I'm thinking. The Last of Us proves that a big, fat, budget AAA game can have that gravity of storytelling. That something that, like, a little indie project you would expect from that, or that something you think, like, a small team could produce. But The Last of Us shows the video game development community that you can put that loving attention and intensity and storytelling into something as humongous as something like Gears of War or God of War or something like that.
Mm-hmm. So
yeah, I think
this?
That's part of the reason why I think it wins out.
Yeah, so it's like Jamie, go ahead.
I was just going to say I don't think that in any way the writing in Gone Home is inferior, but I think that you're right in terms of the potential ramifications for games. I think the two games, the writing is fairly on par. They're so different. But I think that in terms of how these games are going to change games for the better in terms of the writing, I think that Last of Us takes the cake.
That's a good point. I would say they both win, but The Last of Us ekes it out because it's more improbable.
Yeah. Yeah.
Agreed.
Yay. The Last of Us wins best writing or story.
Challenging category.
Yeah, definitely. And runners up being Gone Home and Brothers, A Tale of Two Sons.
Griffin said with a grimace.
Yeah.
I saw that coming from a mile away.
I feel like this next category is going to be pretty hot. I'm not going to lie.
All right. The next category we have here is Best New Pokemon. We have contenders being Chespin, Greninja, Honedge, Aegislash, Alucha, Gudra, Puss in Boats, and Jenny McCarthy.
You want to explain your thinking on Jenny McCarthy, Griffin?
I didn't put it on there.
You said it had to stay.
Well, she's in that blue cigarette commercial, right? I don't know. I'll take her off. She's good for her, though. She's doing great. Congratulations, Jenny McCarthy. It's an honor to be nominated. Oh, okay. Looks like we got to take a quick break here, get everything reestablished, and we'll be back with the dramatic results of our Pokemon discussion. And we're back after that recalibration. This time it's Jeff. We lost Jamie, and I'm Griff still. This
Jamie
is
creating a disturbance in the Force, so we had to kill him.
We are going to continue on with the Pokemon discussion that we just started, and then we'll continue on with our awards. And yeah,
let's do this.
So we had announced the Pokemon that were candidates for this category. We dutifully removed Jenny McCarthy.
Well, she has no evolutions.
Yeah. Well, you know. Can't hate on that, right?
I guess she evolved from Playboy Centerfold to quote unquote legitimate actress.
Oh, I thought you were gonna go with stand-up comedian to red faction character.
Oh, that's right. I thought she was in not red faction, Command and Conquer.
Command and Conquer, yeah. Was it Red Faction 3 or something?
Yeah, one of those.
Oh, Red Alert.
Red Faction is the Mars one. You're thinking of
Red Alert.
Gorilla Town. Red Alert. There you go. Anyway, Pokemon.
All right. The most pressing question of 2013, which was the best Pokemon of 2013?
having played more of Ni No Kuni and seen I have a cat purse right now. I don't have Puss in Boats yet. But he is a strong contender.
Yes, yep. An honorable mention, I'd say.
An honorable mention. Yeah, he probably gets the honorable mention award. I think we're just gonna say right off the bat.
Sure. yeah, Puss in Boats is fantastic. And yeah, Cat Purse is great too.
He's the best Pokemon that isn't a Pokemon.
Yep. Nailed it.
Yeah. All the other ones are really cute, but like none of them, I can't think of any other ones in that game that have enough going on to like stand out outside of the game world.
Totally. Yeah. I agree. Except for that cat, man. Cat's so cool.
Okay, so real Pokemon.
Yes. Best so new have, real
let's
Pokemon.
Let's refresh the list because we stepped away from this for a little bit.
Yeah. We got Chespin.
So we can come back to it. Chespin.
Greninja.
Yeah. Honedge. Aegislash, its evolution. Hawlucha and Gudra, which is the envy of freaky online perverts everywhere. So, initial thoughts for me. Oh, this is hard. I'm gonna say Chespin. We probably get rid of him right off the bat, in my opinion. What do you think?
I'm okay with that. I mean,
you're okay with that.
I think Chespin is a contender, but you know, it doesn't belong on this list of best.
Yeah, this is. Let's just be real here. This is a three-way game between Greninja, the Honedge line, and Hawlucha.
Yeah.
Which yep. are possibly the greatest Pokemon.
Yeah.
Like in like the last 5 years.
So let's get rid of Gudra and that dumb garbage.
I'm gonna give Puss in Boots the honorary green color.
Good. Yeah. Next year's category.
Gudra is slimy and attractive, but no.
So sweaty. Do we have to distill it down to Honedge or Aegislash or one or the other? Like, is
I think we can allow that to be the whole line.
I don't know, man. That seems unfair.
Seems unfair. Okay,
yeah,
fine.
I mean,
okay.
I think it puts it at an advantage. Like, you know,
that's fair. That's fair.
I mean,
so do we want to go based off abilities here, or do we want to go based purely
I'm
off
talking
of
just best Pokemon?
Best Pokemon.
So that may include abilities, that may include design, that may include just, like, you know, personal attachment to it.
Okay, well, Greninja has a tongue scarf.
Yes, he does.
So, I don't know how you beat that, except for the fact that Hawlucha is a flying luchador.
Right, a bird, an owl that is a luchador, Mexican pro wrestler owl.
Yeah, I don't know. And then Aegislash, the sword and shield, that's pretty cool. The coolest thing about him, though, is that he has that awesome animation where mm-hmm. he unsheathes the sword.
Right.
And then flips in the air and is a sword and shield.
Right. I think in terms of just a Pokemon, it's such a cool Pokemon that has different states based on the actions you choose for it.
Yeah, and they've done a lot of forms before, but with the shift to 3D, this was the first form where, like, the shift from form to form was incredibly noticeable. Like, they've had other stuff that could change mid-battle, but, like, it would expand and contract the sprite or whatever, or, like, blur the sprite and then turn it into the other thing. Mm-hmm. But this is the first thing where the form change is, like, actually a thing that you see happen. Like, actually, you witness the whole geometry of the form change.
Yeah.
So I think that's what makes him so cool, but
I think we take Aegislash off.
You think you would take Aegislash off?
Yeah.
I like him, but if you think we should take him off, I think we pull him. Because we want to be unanimous on this.
Okay.
So you can cut him.
He's cut. I think Aegislash is a cool Pokemon, and like it's a really cool design. But I think just the pure simplicity of Honedge, and if we want to say animation versus animation, like that unsheathing at the beginning of the battle where it's holding its own sheath is super cool.
Yeah. But it doesn't have, as you said, it's not quite as simple. It looks sweet, but it's not. It relies upon. It doesn't just grab you the moment you look at it like Honedge does.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But by that logic, I feel like Honedge can't really compete with Greninja or Hawlucha.
I think you're right.
Because it's just a sword, you know. It's like it's a cool sword. It's a ghost sword. That's fucking awesome. But. Yeah. It's just a sword.
Right.
You've seen that before.
Right.
Have you seen a frog ninja with a tongue scarf? Or
probably. You know, I've seen some permutations of frogs as different things, like a frog knight.
That's true. That's true.
I've seen frogs dress up and host comedy shows. and I've seen frogs do a lot of things. So.
That's true. And how many flying luchador hawks have you seen?
Zero.
In your days? Zero.
None.
I think Hawlucha is gonna get this.
I think Hawlucha is the best Pokemon of 2013.
Yes. I'm gonna give runner up Greninja.
Okay. Yeah. So, you know what? Not a real science here, if you're going to be honest. But if you disagree, you're wrong.
Yeah.
Hawalucha exactly. is the best Pokemon of 2000.
Yeah, you have an inferior opinion if you
right.
disagree.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. All right. Okay. Runners up being Greninja. Fantastic. That's Ninja Pokemon. That's a frog. And then Honed Edge.
With Puss in Boots as a special jury selection.
Yes.
This is the Cannes Film Festival of video game rating shows. Okay, let's move on. This has been we actually took a pretty significant break. So this has been like Best New Pokemon has been the category that has ground the podcast to a halt. So we need to press on into uncharted yeah. territory here.
I feel better, yeah, having stepped into that category and now wrapping it up. I feel like we can, you know, start fresh with a clean beginning, not, you know, wrapping up, tying up those loose ends that we had before. So that brings us to Kickstarter success, the Kickstarter success story of 2013.
Yes. And this is actually a surprisingly meager list. I'm not sure about one of these. You've got Shadowrun Returns. Good choice.
Yeah.
Dive Kick. Ooh, yeah. And Republique. I think we're just going to nix Ouya from that list and all lists.
Well, okay. So, yeah. This is the thing here. Is this Kickstarter success story. There wasn't a lot of stuff that came into fruition from Kickstarter's start to Kickstarter finish this yeah. year. Mm-hmm. You had the things that we had mentioned on this list here, and then obviously a handful of other things that we just haven't played and I'm unaware of. But I think it's the diversity of this list makes for an interesting discussion, because I think there's only one real right answer here, but everything else can be talked about in an interesting way.
I suppose that's true. I mean, they're all very diverse. You've got, you know, a console, which is, you know, completely different than all these other games. Then you've got your iPad game with Republique.
Mm-hmm.
You've got a really small title with Dive Kick, you know, that has very specific goals. And then you've got Shadowrun, which is like reviving an old, incredibly niche genre, mm-hmm. You know, bringing back something that just couldn't exist without fan contribution. So yeah, there's definitely a diversity of stuff going on there, but
right. And I think Dive Kick is one of the more complex ones to have on this list too, since it was pulled from Kickstarter when it was picked up by a publisher.
But I think it's legitimate to have it on here because at least it kind of reminds us that like there are a lot of Kickstarters that that either start off on Kickstarter or you know, get some of their funding on Kickstarter and then, you know, either jump ship in the case of Dive Kick or their Kickstarter doesn't work and they get a publisher. Like I know Raise the Dead, which is a kind of little known game, but it was featured at E3 mm-hmm. For the PS4 was an example of a Kickstarter actually failure. They got picked up by Sony essentially. Mm-hmm. So it just kind of shows all the different ways, I guess, that you can use Kickstarter. So even though it wasn't, I guess, funded through Kickstarter,
yeah,
they shut down their Kickstarter altogether.
Yes, I mean it was canceled because it was picked up by a publisher, and you know all the donations were returned, of course.
Gotcha. Yeah, so I mean, I don't think we can necessarily call it, you know, the Kickstarter success story of the year because mm-hmm. you know, ultimately it wasn't funded on Kickstarter, but it is. It definitely kind of illustrates all the different ways in which Kickstarter is being used. You know what I mean?
I agree. Yeah.
In my similar token, even though Ouya made $8 million, which is, I guess, the most any game has ever made, or any game-related thing has ever made, uh-huh. it's just no.
it is not the winner, because it is not a good thing. But it did, I mean, I would say it was a success. Like, it went and did what it said it would do. It didn't do it to perfection, like with creating the greatest controller of all times and a playable device that works consistently. But having, you know, the promise of being an open-ended Android box that connects to a TV that you can play video games on, it totally was that. And from accounts, it works.
Hey, it helped the world realize that much sooner that a dedicated Android console maybe isn't a great idea.
Yeah. Yep. Way to take the fall, Ouya.
And it gave us Towerfall.
Yeah.
and that one frog game that's really funny.
Okay.
Have you seen that frog game?
No, I'm not familiar with that frog game. Is it about a ninja frog?
It's a really broken-ass, like, just jumping game where you can just, like, knock stuff over, and it's like a giant playground where you just get points for random stuff, and you're just a frog, and it's super, super glitchy and hilarious. But anyway, so, yeah, Ouya sucks. We all know that. Why isn't Broken Age on here?
Well,
I guess it was a 2012, wasn't it?
It didn't come out in 2013.
Oh, I forgot. It's just been so long.
Yeah. And, I backed Banner Saga, and I think it came out, but I don't know.
Banner Saga? Wait, that sounds so familiar. What is that?
I don't really know.
All right.
Like, I think it was a strategy RPG with an interesting, like, art style, like, hand-drawn animations. But I don't know.
Sounds like a success.
It was something I gave $5, and I think I got it. I just don't remember. Because I see it on Steam. Like, wait a second. Didn't I buy you before we came out already? So whatever. This is getting into a weird territory, but
it came out in 2012. So if you want to talk about projects that Ouya started in 2012 too. So.
Well, No. I'm not saying things that started and ended in 2013. I'm saying products that came out in 2013.
Gotcha. Yeah. Okay. So Banner Saga is on there. Add it and remove it immediately.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Then you have Republic.
Yeah.
By all accounts, it's supposed to be decent. I mean, that's still ongoing, right?
Yeah, it's episodic. I played it for maybe 30 minutes, and it's okay, I guess. I mean, it looks good. It looks really good. It just, like, it's a stealth action game. Well, it's a stealth game where you're kind of bouncing around from camera or wires or circuitry box or something, and hacking stuff by just possessing it and then instructing this little lady to run around and not get caught by guards. And it's, I don't know, like, it has kind of like that ghost trick, jump from location to location, figure out how to solve this puzzle without directly interacting with it. And then, you know, you're also taking care of this third party that is constantly screwing things up and dying. But it just doesn't grab me at all. The voice acting, though, it is by a really fantastic crew, like, it's just, it's kind of lost. I don't know if it's because I'm playing it on an iPhone 4S that things just don't sync up right, and it's like, oh, it's Jennifer Hale talking exactly like Jennifer Hale.
She always does that, though. Yeah, that's kind of her voice,
right?
I think the thing with Republic, I mean, look, you've got Shadowrun and Republic left, and I think the obvious choice here is Shadowrun. I mean, both are niche. I would say that Shadowrun was less niche. I mean, it got a lot of coverage. Mm-hmm. You know, it came out. There was, you know, no drama. Mm-hmm. You know, very, by all accounts, a quite solid game. You know, pretty much the package that everyone was expecting. It's got the mod tools, which are going to give it, you know, some extensibility. I think, you know, it's just a very solid. It's basically what we all hoped Kickstarter would be, which is like, hey, here's a cool game idea. You know, let's make it. And they made it.
Yep. Exactly.
And yeah, just by virtue of its very ordinary kind of, you know, moderate success, I think it is our winner.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I think Shadowrun Returns is the Kickstarter success of 2013. It's just, what do we do with the rest of these things?
I don't know. I mean, it doesn't seem like much has come out. I mean, that's really made much of an impact, which is weird. I don't know if that's just, you know, 2013 is a lean year for Kickstarter stuff, or
no. But we need to pick two other runners up.
Two other runners up?
Yeah, like, we have the winner, but
I guess Republic and
Dive Kick.
Yeah. I'm gonna say Ouya, because Ouya is an actual Kickstarter thing, and they got a lot of money out of people.
Okay, I'm okay with that. I mean, I'd be okay, happy to watch Ouya burn, but. If I'm okay with saying it did some good things, if you're okay with that.
Sure. Divekick isn't, I don't think we can call it a Kickstarter success story because it got picked up by a publisher. Even though it is part of, like, Kickstarter's purpose. I don't know. Anyway.
Speaking of Divekick, the publisher that picked it up was Iron Galaxy. I highly recommend you go and dig up Dave Lang reading A Pale Blue Star.
All right.
It's very good.
Okay, I will look into it.
It's very good.
All right, so what's next on our big old list here?
Next on the list, okay, so that's Kickstarter successes 2013 is Shadowrun Returns, runners-up being the Ouya and Republic. Yeah.
Right. I'm good with that.
All right, here we go. Now the softballs are done being pitched. We're getting into some heavy hitters again here. This category is Best Music. So
it's going to be interesting because neither of us together have played all of these games.
Yeah.
So this will be intriguing. So go ahead. Hey, let's hear the categories, or the choices, rather.
Yeah, Best Music, BioShock Infinite, Assassin's Creed 4, Pokemon XY, Ni No Kuni, Zelda, A Link Between Worlds, Far Cry 3, Blood Dragon. What's the full name to Runner 2?
Runner 2, Future Legend of Rhythm Alien.
All right, there we go. And Lost Planet 3 and Super Mario Wii U 3D World for the Wii U.
So
this isn't just one. Yeah. I mean, this could be just one song that's so good that it totally, you know, takes the whole.
Yeah. Tell me what Lost Planet's doing on this list, because I barely touched that game.
Because it's on this list for this one reason alone, and that's the best part of that game is when you get inside your dumb giant mech robot thing and it just starts playing country music, but like vocal-less country music that's just like space trucker, like rhythm guitar and banjo and shit. And it's perfect. Like it is exactly somebody had a great time with that. Like somebody loves kind of StarCraft in jokes and aliens in jokes with, you know, space truckers and having that love for country music. It's good too. So if you watch the show and tell I did of it, I kind of just sit back and let the music play for a while because it's so good.
Interesting. Yeah, I think you're one of the few people who probably gave that music the time of day, which is probably sad. I mean,
yeah. So Lost Planet doesn't do a lot well, but that one joke, it does so well.
Also, apparently your wife calling you and leaving you messages
does pretty well, too. Yep.
And then Assassin's Creed 4. Oh, Sea Shanties, right?
Yes.
Ah, there you go.
Yep. So another kind of comedic nod here. I mean,
the sea shanties are
great. Don't get me wrong. I mean, they are so good. I love listening to them. They've almost burned into my brain in a few situations, like specific songs. I feel like I could go sing them myself. But I mean, like Pirate Radio is really good on your big dumb stealth boat. But of course, it can't win. Like
no, it can. It's good to highlight that those exist because those sound like one of the better parts of the game.
Right. It's essentially, you know, like, you know, putting Weird Al on the Grammy nomination or something.
Like, I also like, I mean, again, I haven't played Assassin's Creed 4 enough to get to Sea Shanties, but I like, just from what I hear, how you have to, like, find Sea Shanties. So, like, the makers of this game recognize that music can be a reward.
Well, In Assassin's Creed 3, you were collecting pages of an almanac or something for Benjamin Franklin, which for all I know didn't do anything because I either gave up on collecting them or was never able to find Benjamin Franklin to give him his dumb pages. So this has the immediate reward of you catch the page, you go on your boat, you're listening to music. Like you don't have to get every single one of them to see what it's given you.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I dig that. Hey, I'm going to pick another target and you tell me how you feel about this. I'm going to target A Link Between Worlds. And I'll tell you why. There's no denying that that game has great music.
Mm-hmm.
However,
mm-hmm.
do we want to give best music of 2013 to a game with remixes of old music?
I don't think there's just remixes though.
There's not just remixes. It's got some good stuff in it.
Okay. I think that if we are to say, if you're leveling that complaint about Zelda, then we need to look at Pokemon first.
Okay, we can look at Pokemon. I mean, Pokemon has a couple of reused tunes, but a lot of their tunes are pretty new. But the question is that OST good enough to be worthy of the title of Best of the Year?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I like a lot of the battle songs. I think that this particular soundtrack divided some people, mm-hmm. and a lot of the Overworld songs are really great.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a strong contender, but I don't know if it's like the best contender either. I would say the one that if we are kind of complaining about, I don't know. Did you have a particular song that really stood out for you when you put Pokemon on this list?
My favorite song is this. I can't find it anywhere to listen to it. It's the song that plays when you're going in between the connectors for the.
Oh yeah,
routes.
That's right. I remember you.
That's my favorite song as gotcha. Well as you know the Pokemon. I like the Pokemon Center remix that they do, and you're right. Mm-hmm. There's been some good battle songs in there,
but they're very different. They're very like techno,
mm-hmm. yeah,
which is intriguing. So yeah, that's definitely a change of pace. But yeah, I mean it's kind of well-worn territory in a way, but definitely the Overworld stuff is a lot grander. They're not using a full orchestra yet, though, for anything. Do we give more points for full orchestra?
Well, I would say that if we I don't think that Pokemon fits because I think there are better choices, mm-hmm. and I think that Pokemon doesn't quite have the memorable music that other
yeah it's not does. I mean, you know, there are a couple of tracks that really do stand out for me, but it's not gonna linger in your mind. Mm-hmm. And I, in fact, even among other Pokemon games, I think there are some tracks that while they may not be as interesting, they lingered a little more. Mm-hmm. For example, I still remember the Generation 4, like not event battle, but the legend battle music okay. for Generation 4. That's still like in my mind. Hmm. And like the champion battle in Gen 4. Gen 6 has some good stuff, but none of it really is like stuck in my head forever. So yeah. we can cut that.
Okay, I'm okay with cutting Pokemon X and Y.
Yeah. For Infinite, I see you hovering over that.
Yeah. So I'm gonna talk briefly about Infinite,
yes.
Infinite, and then then take it off.
Okay. Because, I think I know where you're coming from, and I'm gonna actually agree that. Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah. It what it does is it takes, you know, modern day music or 80s music or whatever classic. Pop tunes, and then it yeah. remixes them into the world that BioShock Infinite is in, so like the 20s.
Yeah, I mean they're really mind-blowing when you hear them, especially, you know, you got your Beach Boys, right. you got your Girls Just Want to Have Fun. I think you got Springsteen in there too.
I don't remember
or,
that.
Not Springsteen, Neil Young maybe.
I don't remember.
Yeah. Lots of cool stuff.
Yeah. And it fits the world really well. It fits with the story that they're trying to tell. It's really cool. And the really cool part I remember was listening to those songs and being like, wait a second. Like, is this like some old hymn that I'm not aware of that the Beach Boys ripped off? Or, and then you go and I went and listened to it or looked it up and I'm like, holy crap. Okay. Wow. Very yeah. cool.
And it's completely justified. I mean, I really rag on stuff for being anachronistic, but mm-hmm. but this makes perfect sense given the context of the story. And I that was probably one of my favorite moments in the game. I mean, the only reason why I think it's right to take it off the list is because there are so many periods of that game that have, you know, just either no music or non-memorable music
right.
That, you know, kind of detract from giving it the category win.
Right. And I also believe that it's the only one on this list that does... that's musical moment is more interesting than the music itself.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, the musical moments are really profoundly great and mm-hmm. they'll definitely stick with me. Will I listen to them, you know, after the fact? Maybe, mm-hmm. but I mean, you know, they have value there, but you know, right. it's not the same consistency that some of these other titles
right.
have.
Right.
So looking at what's left, I yeah. think Ni No Kuni, you know, the farther I get, the more impressed I generally am with the music in that game. Very good music. So definitely a strong contender.
We're going to keep Zelda A Link Between Worlds at the moment.
Okay. What about Blood Dragon? I didn't play this yet.
Blood Dragon is the only game on this list that I went and purchased soundtrack to.
Wow.
Because it's so good. but I can understand if it's not the winner. Like, it is, the music is done by a band called Power Glove.
Okay.
They are a modern day band that does like 80s synth kind of parody music, like not like, you know, like a Weird Al parody, but they're doing music that's supposed to be in the vein of like an something you'd hear in like an 80s B movie action flick, and they nail it, and it's really good.
I feel like for doing something so interesting there, like, you know, do we want to give the best music to the games that are very traditionally musically interesting, or the ones that, you know, do something weird or cool? You know, like, maybe it has a place on this list after all.
Yeah.
I don't know.
To me, it is some of the best music of this year in terms of just like plain regular ass music that I can go listen to. There are some really good songs. Like, there's a lot of thunder in the soundtracks.
Like legitimately thunder, or
yeah,
like thunderous, like, sound?
No, the sound of thunder being played as part of the track. It's very good. But I'm okay with taking it off this list, because...
Well, before we cut it, okay. What about Runner 2? Runner 2, so I think I might have played more of Runner 2 than you have.
Yeah.
You didn't. Did you ever get it?
Yeah, I played to the plane boss in the first world, I think.
Gotcha. Okay, so I played farther than you.
Uh-huh.
Runner 2 has some great music,
yeah.
But I wonder if Runner 2 is worthy of being on this list.
I think the music is really good. Like, that main title song is excellent, and I mean, it's a game that is literally based on music. Like,
that's true.
Are moving along with the beat of the music, and your actions make different sounds that are influencing the song.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not novel at all. Like,
well, the thing is, I mean, it's kind of an extension of what was done in Runner, and Runner had great music too. And, you know, Runner 2 has a little more variety, let's say, but,
yeah.
But is it on the same level as the rest of the things on this list?
No, I don't believe it's on the same level.
So let's cut Runner 2 first.
Yeah.
Before we start cutting Blood Dragon, because maybe we want to give that a place on this list somewhere.
All right.
Because we're getting close to three.
All right.
And it might be that Blood Dragon goes next, or it might be that something else goes next.
Okay. I like this. We'll say that, because
yeah.
I would like to see Blood Dragon win, but I, you know, that's okay.
Let's leave it on the list. I love crappy 80s music.
Yeah.
So it's not going anywhere yet. So okay. 3D World you didn't play.
No.
I have a feeling you might not be as attracted to the music as I was. Okay. I freaking love the music in that game. I think it's fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
It's very jazzy. A lot of stuff that just gets stuck in your head and stays there.
Uh-huh.
I mean, you kind of know what the deal is. You've seen media for it.
Yeah. Yeah, all the music has been great so far. Like, it sounds like great Mario music that's not the normal Wii U bullshit of, like, that, you know, the wah-wahs and the silly nonsense that's been happening lately.
Yeah, well, I mean, the thing is, starting with Mario Galaxy, you know, every mainline Mario game, like the 3D Marios, it's going to be orchestrated now. I mean, that's just kind of the way it's, unless, you know, they could change their mind, but that's basically what they've done going forward. And they're all awesome. And I really like them. I don't know what to think of them. It's so hard to judge what the best music is, because it's such a subjective category.
Yeah.
I mean, these all are, but.
Right. Since we made it such a subjective category, we can't even put one song against the other to say this song is the best song, or this is the best soundtrack as a whole. I mean, just because of the I think it would be we don't have the amount of material to make that, like, two categories work like that, I believe.
Yeah, I mean, we could have mined the OST list, but that, you know, that's obviously not something that we did going into this. So I think and maybe what we do in this situation is we don't necessarily choose a best of the year, but we just narrow it down to three, and kind of these are the three that we go with. But I don't know.
We'll see.
Maybe. Or maybe we want to choose a best. I don't know.
I think we should stick with the trend here and choose
the
best.
Okay. So talk to me about, I think the weak link here, no pun intended, is still Link Between Worlds.
Really?
Even though the music in that game was great.
Because I think Link Between Worlds is the winner.
Is the winner?
Yeah. I think it is the best music of this year.
Okay.
I mean,
Go on.
Yeah, I think the original songs, like the Yuga theme is very good. There's, I mean, yes, a lot of it is remixes, but there are enough things different about it. Like going into the Milk Bar and listening to all the classic songs or songs that are in the game remixed yet again into a totally different song style. You have the Low Rule theme, which is one of the coolest songs. Such an awesome piece.
That's true. Yeah, yeah. Although Low Rule, are you talking about the Dark World Low Rule theme or the da 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 that song?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, it is a good track. And when you reverse that, that is the Hyrule theme reversed. Did you know that?
I didn't know that. That's cool.
They love to do that. They did that with Skyward Sword as well.
GameCube menu music.
They did that in Skyward Sword. They reversed. I think it was the Song of Time.
Yeah,
is the main theme. What about Ni No Kuni? Is that, how do you feel about that? Talk to me about where that stands for you personally.
I think Ni No Kuni is tied to the game moments that were happening when that music was playing more so than any other song on this list.
Gotcha.
Or any game on this list. So, like, the first time when you get the airship, so to speak, and that music kicks in when you're flying, it's just, it's like, it sends shivers down you, and it's so remarkable. And that first time you go into the world map and it's playing the world map music, and it's just like, I don't know, everything is just so grand and so epic and you know, orchestrated extremely well. It's just like it is the big open JRPG world music that you expect to hear, and it does it so wonderfully. Now I can also say that, you know, it does everything really well, but it also, like, you know, it lives in those moments, and it's not 100% novel and unique. I mean, it is very good, and I enjoy listening to it even outside of the game. But
yeah, yeah.
It's RPG music, if you want to, like, get reductive about it.
Yeah, I mean, well, you could get reductive about anything and you know, dismiss it entirely as well. I mean, I will say that, you know, the battle theme in that game, just the regular battle theme, is not the world's greatest battle theme, but it's got some good tracks.
Yeah.
It's hard for me to just shut it down. But, I mean, I do agree that Zelda does have... It does have a lot of, like, nostalgia. It's got the acoustic remixes, like you said. That's pretty cool.
So I have a question for you. Did you play Sticker Star?
I did, yes, but I'm not all the way through.
How much is 3D World's music like Sticker Star's music?
Not as much as you think.
Okay. I was gonna say, just give it to Super Mario 3D World, and then if you can tell me it's like the Sticker Star music.
It's similar to Sticker Star a little bit, but it's more. I think of Sticker Star's music is more like, it's more like suited to, like, walking around and having a good time, and like Mario's more like intense.
Okay.
Well, I don't know. It's hard for me to describe the difference there. I think 3D World deserves a spot on this. I'm willing to give it to Link Between Worlds, actually. Okay. I think.
All right.
I'm willing to let that be number one.
Can we take off Ni No Kuni and let those three be it then?
Sure, why not?
All right.
Ni No Kuni, I don't think we're ever going to fully agree on this, but just cut that one.
Yeah.
I'm cool with that.
I think this is a good list. I think the right choice... I wish I had listened to more of the music of Mario of 3D World, because I'm sure it's really good. It's just... I just don't know.
Oh, yeah. It's got some great stuff. I mean, again, we all should have kind of done our homework here and listened to a couple standout tracks from each one to help make our decision. But I think, you know, Link Between Worlds, I'm a little reluctant to give something with so many remixes such high praise, but it does. It is a really great musical experience from start to finish. There's no doubt about that. So it deserves some praise for that.
Right. And I think the remixes are unique enough on those classic songs that it is really good. And I think that if you have nostalgia for it, it works. And if you don't, and you're going in and you're listening to it the first time, you're like, hey, this is a kick-ass track. Like,
yeah.
I mean, just because it's a remix doesn't mean it's a, you know, should be degraded, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I will say before we move on, Phoenix Wright had some pretty bitchin' music in it too. So cool. No, that game.
Objection.
Okay, we can move on now to the next category.
Okay. Here we go. Finally, the category I'm most excited for, 2013's 2012 Game of the Year. There were some games that we played this year that came out last year.
Yeah.
And for various reasons, they didn't come into our field of play until this year. So here is our list. We have Zero Escape, Virtue's Last Reward. We have Persona 4, Golden. Spelunky. Hotline Miami. We have Lone Survivor. And FTL, Faster Than Light.
I know what I want to win already, but I might hold back until we get a little farther along.
Okay.
So, what are your thoughts? Tell me what you're thinking.
I can't see cutting anything on this list.
I think, okay, hear me out. Okay. I think to make this easier on ourselves, we should cut the stuff that didn't have anything relevant happen with it in 2013 other than us playing it. No?
I disagree.
We do disagree. Tell me more.
Because I think that if you're saying that if there was some additional piece of content or if there is something that made this game a more interesting experience in 2013 than 2012, then essentially you're getting into DLC of the year.
Yeah, but I mean, Persona 4 Golden is a 2013 title.
Was it? No. It was
2012?
It was 2012. Wasn't it?
Maybe. Hold on.
Persona 4 Golden was... Yeah, it was last year. Yep, it was 2012.
Oh, okay. Well, crap. that takes my whole rationale for why I was going to choose a winner and just chucks it out the window.
I mean, yeah, I think that if you're saying that a game has done a bunch of things interesting and that's why you play it this year, I think that's kind of why you were playing that game, right? Like, if a game came out that was already out last year and it didn't do anything new, it's like, well, okay, why would you even notice it?
Yeah. Okay, well let me I guess I'll tip my hand now and tell you. I think that Spelunky should have a good shot in this category because with the PC and the Vita release, there emerged a community that is still heavily involved with the game. I mean, as you may or may not recall, I'm kind of semi into Let's Players.
Kind of a Spelunky guy.
Well, I love Spelunky, but I'm into Let's Players and Twitch streamers to some degree. Mm-hmm. And after Spelunky came to the PC, the game was basically the same, but this whole community emerged. You've got streamers who play Spelunky every single night. You know, these are pretty reasonably well-known people. It is a game. I guess the major addition was the daily challenge, which you could call DLC maybe, but in 2013, it experienced a bit of a renaissance. I mean, it launched in 2012. People talked about it. It did all right. But it really blew up in 2013, despite the fact that it came out in 2012. And to me, that's why I think...
Right. Well, I mean, going from one platform to multiple platforms is going to help things out quite a bit.
Yeah, and I think just getting the Twitch exposure, it's the kind of game where first of all, having a way to compete with the Daily Challenge was ingenious.
Yeah.
Just to kind of pit people against each other. And also, it's the kind of game where you can have goals that are incredibly difficult and that lend themselves very well to streaming because, you know, you can do this thing where you have to go through every level and collect a special item in every level and you have to do all these special tricks and get the last boss to suicide in a certain way. Mm-hmm. And there's all these challenges, you know, to get the ultimate ending and the ultimate stuff that really lend themselves well to having a community. And, you know, with the PC, you've got the Twitch streamers, you've got lots more means of recording. So I think that made it really blow up kind of in the latter half of the year here. Right. So for me, that's the one. I think that's the one that I see as most embodying what I thought the category kind of meant.
Gotcha. Well, you know, I played Spelunky in 2012 on Xbox when it came out, and I had a great time with it. I loved it and was playing co-op and counter operative, and then I just kind of fell away from it. I'm not saying that's a knock against it. It's just like I was just kind of done with it. And
yeah, I mean, you just didn't have the same experience,
right?
Other people did, but go on, yeah.
No, I think your case for it is valid. Like, I think I agree. Like, it sounds like that was an incredibly. I know how attached to that game you were for how much you were playing it this year, and I have heard that the daily challenges like are fantastic.
Yeah, and by a similar token, I think that I can eliminate something that I put on this list of Lone Survivor,
mm-hmm.
because even though that actually relaunched this year for the PS Vita, and you know it's the definitive version, it's got a little bit of extra content, although they patched that into the PC version as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a way to get more eyeballs in the game. It's you know, this game finally coming home to consoles. I think it also came to PS3. That's all fun and good. Did it make a huge splash? Not really. I mean, it remains one of my favorite games of 2012, but I had experienced it in 2012, and I'm not sure that experiencing it in 2013 brought anything significantly new to the table for
yeah.
me.
Yeah, gotcha.
So by that token, I kind of want to take that off the list.
Yep. I'm okay with that too. Yeah, since, I mean, I like it. I like the Silent Hill vibe it gives me. Mm-hmm. Like, there seems like there's a lot of cool stuff there. If I really dug into it, I just didn't.
Yeah.
On a different note, I think now looking over this list again, Hotline Miami gets taken off.
Mm-hmm.
Because I played that game last year on PC, and I think that there's nothing interesting about the Vita version except it just got more eyes on it.
Yeah, it controls a lot worse.
Or I think it's on PS3 as well. And yeah. I didn't really play it a ton this year, except just to try it out and to get that opinion. But yeah, I think it doesn't hang.
Yeah, I agree. And I think I can go ahead and take off the next one. And you tell me how you feel about this. Well, first, tell me, why is FTL on the list?
Because I played FTL this year.
Did you start it this year?
Yeah.
No.
That is the only reason why. And I'm okay with that coming off the list because... You know, FTL is a great game, but I think that there are.
Yeah. Go ahead.
It's great. It's really good. There's nothing more to say about it. Like, you should play FTL. It's cheap. Go get it for PC or whatever. Yeah, it's a roguelike.
I think FTL is the game that we could talk about again in 2014 because it's got an expansion coming.
And again, to segue from the previous category, it has some freaking awesome music. Just great space music.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is fantastic, fantastic music. And it's great. I mean, I love the genre. It's you know, roguelite of a sort.
Mm-hmm.
Really, really fun game. So definitely everyone should play that game.
Yep.
I think everything else on this list, I think we have our top three here, and I think they all make sense in one way or another, personally.
Yeah, I'm okay with it. I mean, honestly, I'm okay with... I don't think Virtue's Last Reward wins this category.
No, but I think it can stay, and I'll tell you why. Because it went free on PS Plus this year, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that got it into a lot of hands,
yeah.
or some hands. So I think it has a reason to exist here.
Yeah.
No,
I think it exists on this list. Like, if I have to choose one game that came out this or last year that you know I just wasn't aware of, and I played it this year and loved it, I think Virtue's Last Reward is you know better than FTL.
Yeah, and also you know just because by virtue of people not really knowing about it, and mm-hmm. it's something that hasn't really gotten what it deserved, you know, it hasn't really gotten the respect and the attention it deserved.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, hopefully with some people getting it for free, that got a few more eyes on it that, you know, that kind of gave it a bit of a renaissance in 2013. Even if it was a small one, I think it's a good reason for keeping it on the list and having it occupy, you know, one of these top three places.
Mm-hmm.
And then Persona 4, just a great game. I mean, I don't personally like it, but I recognize it. It's a fantastic, series, and you know it's definitive version. And have you how far have you gotten in it?
I'm about halfway through it now. I'm got maybe two or three more dungeons left. I'm in September.
Oh, okay. And when does it end?
Like December.
Gotcha.
I think.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that game is really good, and it actually does. It is a better version. Well, it is a better version than the PlayStation 2 because It has added some interesting new pieces, like different things you can do, different jobs, essentially. It's added two new... it's created interactions that you didn't have before with one character and added a completely new character who... They're interesting. By no means are they as interesting as some of the other characters that are already there. But hey, you know what? They're already there and it's great. There's some other content in terms of just like story stuff that happens that kind of helps fill out some of the lower points, or like the, I shouldn't say lower points. It's just kind of like a drought of activity in the game. So there's some moments there that are fun. The voice acting changes that they made, I think, are my biggest complaint, but that's only because I have an attachment to PlayStation 2, and I can, you know, I can tell it. But I think the character is stronger for the Chie character is a more interesting character than they were before because of the new voice. And I think that Teddy does such a good job emulating the old voice that it's you wouldn't even know.
Gotcha. What was I going to say about this? Yeah. Also, the other reason why it's good is that you can enjoy it on current gen hardware.
Yeah, it looks so good on that OLED screen of the PS Vita, and it takes advantage of. Well, I shouldn't say it takes advantage of that. It's just really nice to have a JRPG that you can suspend and, you know, just kind of put aside and pick up. Like, you don't have to find a save spot. You can just, like, you know.
The mobile platform handhelds are great for RPGs, honestly. Mm-hmm. If you can suspend them, like you said, if you can put your thing to sleep and come back to it later, it's really nice. I really like that. So cool. I think we have our list here. I'm going to push for Spelunky as number one because it had a huge renaissance this year. Mm-hmm. What do you think? You can say no.
I think Persona 4 Golden is the best game on the Vita. I think it is the game that if you are an RPG person, you need to play Persona 4. It's cheap. There's nothing poor that you can say about Persona 4 Golden. I mean, had I played it last year, I would have probably put it on my game of the year list. Very high. I'm okay
depends
with
what the category means is the problem.
Right, I'm okay with if I'm okay with giving it to Spelunky because you've made a really good case for kind of that revival of interest in it, and I think that
it's not that it's the best game on this list. It's that it is the game on this list that kind of was relevant in 2013 because it gained relevance in 2013 despite being a 2012 title.
Right.
Like, it came to public attention.
Right.
So maybe it's a little different than the initial spirit of the category, but it's kind of a way to kind of push aside our personal opinions and different experiences and just kind of settle on something that is a little more objective, maybe?
Yes, I agree. I think Spelunky is a worse game than Persona 4. Or Persona 4 Golden. Either one. But I think I can appreciate that coming from it with a more critical eye and objective eye, saying that it has improved this year for several reasons.
Okay, cool. Let's call it that and put VLRs and Persona 4 as runners up. And move on to the next one.
Yep. All Vita titles. Interesting.
Very interesting. Vita, friggin' buy a Vita, everyone.
Yeah. Do it.
Yes. I'm gonna VLR in purple for a.
All right, so 2013's 2012 game of the year is Spelunky. Specifically, what is the version name on it?
I think it's just Spelunky. They call it Spelunky HD, but the title is Spelunky.
All right, so the one specifically for PC or for Vita.
Yeah, I mean, I think PC is the most noteworthy, but you know, you can get it on your other platforms too if you want.
Because I don't believe the Xbox 360 has that.
It doesn't have the daily challenges now. Yeah.
So don't go get the old one.
No.
Go get the new one. Which
you're dumb if you buy indie games.
Now we need to stop because I'm starting to think about this category more.
Don't do it.
Yeah, I'm starting to think maybe Spelunky came out this year. But okay, whatever. Whatever.
It's too confusing. Yeah, we're going to move on.
all right. You win in a technicality, Spelunky. All right, next category. Right. Get that out of here. Best villain of 2013. Our list is Joel. Not from the community.
Is it Joel McHale?
Not Joel McHale. Not Joel from the community. Not Joel Talk Soup Joel. Not VGX Joel. Joel from The Last of Us.
Okay, Joel from The Last of Us.
Next, we have Trevor from Grand Theft Auto V. We have Colorado State Senator Stephen Armstrong from Metal Gear Rising Revengeance. Mm-hmm. We have Yuga from Zelda, A Link Between Worlds. Mm-hmm. We have Raptor News head Bob Barbas from DMC Devil May Cry. We have Shadar from Ni No Kuni.
Don't you mean Shadar?
Yes, thank you. And then finally, we have Adam Orth / Microsoft Deal With It. I think that verbiage is 100% accurate and doesn't need to be changed at all.
Yes, we're getting a little fourth wall breaking here, or meta here with the Microsoft as best villain. But
right.
I think it's worth having in there.
I'm going to take Trevor off right away.
Okay,
because I think he's the weakest.
Yeah. I think the game goes to great pains also, just from what I've seen of playthroughs, to make him like an anti-hero and not even quite a villain.
Yep.
So I don't think he really deserves a place on this list.
Well,
anti-hero.
I mean, if you want to talk about that, then we're going to have to talk about Joel.
That's true. Oh, Joel is an interesting case. I'm not sure how to feel about Joel yet. I'm avoiding him for now.
Okay.
I'm gonna talk about Yuga, because I don't think Yuga is cool for one reason. Well, maybe two reasons. One reason, number one, is he sings his own theme song.
Yeah.
Yep. And reason number two is the painting thing. And I don't really think as a villain he's a very interesting character.
Mm-hmm.
I think he just has those things going on. And I don't know. I'm not sure if he is like my top villain of the year.
Yeah, I'm okay with him coming off, because I think if you want to have like JRPG kind of ill-defined villain, I think that we have other people on this list that fit that category better.
Yeah. So I think we're safe to cut him. I'll go ahead and take
that. Get rid of Yuga. I'm going to take off, well, I shouldn't just say that straight away, but Raptor News head Bob Barbas. I don't know if he hangs with this crowd we have here, because his thing is kind of gimmicky. I mean,
so, it's cool, though. I mean, go on.
Well, so I think his, what's more interesting about him is the situation where you actually interact with him, and so you're playing DMC, and through the course of the game, like in the reality world, there's this obvious Bill O'Reilly parody who's talking about how you're, you know, a disruptor of peace and how you're a terrorist and you're awful and all that, and you know, slinging all that mud. And then you go into the demon world, and you know, he's a demon, and he's, you know, kind of trying to persuade the other demons, but just let them know of your presence when you're in this area. Mm-hmm. So you get to a point in the game where you decide it's time to go after good old Bob Barbas. And by doing so, you jump into a TV screen and start walking through the graphical treatment of the news lettering as if it's a level.
Don't the words attack you?
The words are platforms that you're moving around.
Okay.
And then you get to him, and he is literally a head, like Zordon-style head, just floating out there, and you fight him by platforming. Like, his attacks are like these walls. Not even that. Like, it's just like, it's like these rotating walls that you have to navigate through and not get hit, and if you dodge enough, then he powers down, and you beat the crap out of him. So I think that, in terms of a villain, like, it's, I think he's pretty transparent. He's a parody of, you know,
but a decent one. I mean, from what I've seen of him, I mean, I don't know if we have like, it depends on how we define villain. I mean, by striking Yuga first, I guess I kind of threw down the gauntlet and said, you know, let's not make this just about mechanics, but maybe we do want this to be about, you know, mechanical,
I'd say,
the actual process of fighting it.
Yeah, I think that it's worth talking about here, but I don't think he's up there with these other characters.
Okay. Well, you would know better than I, so I'm cool to cut him.
Okay, good. He's cut.
Okay, this is going to be tricky because I don't want spoilers on Shadar. Yeah. But yep. He strikes me as he looks awesome.
Mm-hmm.
He seems a little one note from what I've seen of him.
Yeah.
However, I suspect there may be a little more depth than the game is letting on. Is that a true statement?
Tons.
Okay. Okay. I'm going to have to trust you on where Shadar falls in relation to everyone else. Is he a worthy person to keep on this list?
For now, yeah.
Okay. Okay. That's fine.
Yeah. Because I think that in terms of villains, people who, pure category name, people who are villainous,
uh-huh.
Shadar does, well, I don't know. If that's the case, then it's Stephen Armstrong, hands down. But if you're just talking about bad dudes who do awful things, Shadar is up there over some of these characters. And he's interesting. He has an arc. He is a character. And he's ominous and he is deadly. But you had mentioned, like, the game foreshadows that there is definitely more to him than meets the eye initially.
Yeah, I'm getting the sense he might be tragic, but I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah. Just the game, there are just some hints being dropped, and I tend to be kind of on the alert when those things happen.
Yeah.
So we shall see with him.
Okay.
But okay. Tell me about Colorado Senator Stephen Armstrong. I wish I had watched this monologue.
Oh my god. Okay, so this is it okay if I tell you about the ending of your Solid Rising Revengeance?
Yeah.
Okay, so get this. The game ends and you find out that there has been a political figure who's been working behind the scenes to create a mass tragedy to implicate to prompt a world war, essentially. So
that doesn't even sound like Metal Gear. What are you talking about?
I know, right? Totally novel. First, that's 100% Platinum Games influence right there. No, so that is not. I mean, that is true, but that was a joke. So this character, he is just a man in a suit, just a business suit, and he gets inside this gigantic, like, multi-storied construction looking, like, Constructicon looking thing that's like this giant Metal Gear, and his plan is to, like, essentially kill enough people in a military U.S. military base to allow for his private military group to then kind of take the fight out of the country and launch the world into this world war, because
gotcha.
He believes that Americans are too soft and they need to have war to fuel them and to unify them. And it gets into this, like, 9/11 conspiracy theory level of, like, somebody spent way too much time creating this character. Like, and like, it starts sounding kind of real. And then you're like, wait, no, this is a video game. But what's even better is he is a dude who's in a giant mech who's trying to, like, kill you and do all this stupid garbage and blow up the world. But then you cut him out of the mech, and it turns out that he is more powerful than the mech because he's pumped full of nanomachines, and you can't do anything to him.
Uh-huh.
So you have this elongated, awful, grueling boss fight where you're just, like, chiseling away at him, and then you know, you finally get to the end of it, and it's crazy. Like, the fight is crazy. It's grueling is the only way to put it. Like, I would have quit that game so many times if I wasn't there. But just the dialogue that man says makes him one of the best Metal Gear villains ever, because it's so crazy and so like it's not crazy for the sake of crazy, like Psycho Mantis, like, here's my gimmick, like that. But it is, like, too good to be just crazy.
Okay, so he sounds pretty neat. He sounds like the most...
He's a neat dude.
The most Metal Gear-y Metal Gear villain of all Metal Gears.
Right.
So you think he stays for now?
I think he stays for now.
Okay, I'm going to trust you on this one.
Thank you.
Okay, how about Joel?
How about Joel?
So, do you think, okay, I guess the question we have to ask is he a villain?
Yeah.
I mean, he does some pretty bad things.
He does some pretty awful things, for sure. Yeah. But, yeah. I mean,
I don't know.
Calling Joel a villain, I think, is painting a picture too black and white.
Maybe. It's very sensationalist, I would say. I mean, it's like headline grabbing. Mm-hmm. And there's definitely some obvious truth to it. Otherwise, it wouldn't be worth putting here.
Right.
He's a really good character.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, before this list was best character, and then they all ended up being bad dudes because that just was how it was.
Like the rest of America, you just love it when people are dark.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the thing about Joel. I mean, that's a game where obviously there are some horrible people. I mean, the worst of them probably being Nolan North.
David.
Raping Nolan North.
Yeah. David's character is pretty awful.
Yeah. I guess I would say it's almost a compliment to the game that you can't really call Joel a villain because there are very few villains in that game.
Right.
I'm just kind of trying to make it easy on us here.
No, I think that's fine. I think that maybe Joel isn't hanging with this other crowd because of his like complexity as a character, whereas everything else here is kind of more storybook or fictional or, you know,
So I think what either happens to Joel is either he wins the category outright,
right? Yeah.
Or we cut him from the list with the recognition that it's actually kind of an honor to be cut from the list.
Yeah. Right. Right.
So we have two choices.
The question is then if that also ties into if we cut Joel, then that's us saying that Adam Orth / Microsoft Deal With It is one of the top three. Villains of 2013, which, you know, I'm okay with that, actually, now that I said that out loud.
Yeah, I'm okay with that too.
All right, cut Joel,
he's going.
Yeah.
we did it.
Yep,
we did. Right, so hey,
Joel,
let's
you'll
talk
get
Microsoft.
Your due elsewhere.
Yes, does Microsoft win this category?
Does I mean I think it does, doesn't it?
I think it wins this category.
I think that whole fiasco,
yeah.
You know,
they are the thing that the most gamers hated this year. I mean, I think their fortunes have changed a bit,
right?
But win 2013,
and it sucks that it's one real man that made these choices, and that, you know, maybe his actions ended up being beneficial for the, like, he's some sort of scapegoat that has.
Well, yeah, he's kind of at the front of this, but I mean, you know, behind him is a lot of other people making bad choices. You got your trick. You got, you know, people like that. So it's not just Adam Orth.
Right.
You know, he even has acknowledged his role as a villain. You know, he kind of did the little, he's been talking about, you know, he's been making the rounds doing speeches. Did you hear about this?
Mm-mm.
He's talking about like picking up the pieces after getting fired from Microsoft and like all the abuse he received. And he's been I think he gave a talk at, where was it? I can't remember, but he's been in the news in the past couple of weeks and months, kind of making rounds, talking about his experiences. So he's kind of, things have quieted down a bit, but I think he definitely, and he enraged the most gamers this year.
Yeah.
for that, I think that he and Microsoft can kind of, you know, steal the story.
Right. And I think it's important that it's not just this one man. Like, yes, he did say some pretty stupid things and he did, you know, instigate the rage of the internet by what some of the things he was saying, but I think that a lot of it is Microsoft kind of coming along with it too and never really stepping in front and saying, no, this is our vision, or then, you know, saying this is what we want to do and then backhanding video game players in the process as well, just consistently as time has gone on.
I think it's a fitting victor. I think it really is. In a year with you've got your Joel, which is a character that we agreed we're not going to call a villain.
Right.
You've got two other villains that are appropriately villainous, but this is just, it's so perfect, and it really encapsulates, you know, we need one category where Microsoft gets, you know, it's stuck to them.
For sure.
And this seems like the best one.
Yeah. Microsoft's like smugness, their just them kind of having that 2006 Sony mentality of just like, yep, we own this place. Yep. We can do whatever we want and you guys are going to eat it up. Like to have such a rude awakening by the internet was a good thing.
Yeah. It's amazing the hubris that these guys come up with when they've been successful for a little while.
Okay.
Really crazy. Anyway.
So best villain of the year is Adam Orr/Microsoft. Deal with it. Runners up being Colorado Senator Stephen Armstrong and Shadar.
And of course, to anyone who disagrees, deal with it. Hashtag deal with it.
Yeah.
All right.
Next category. What do we have here? Okay. Next category, we have best moment.
And these first couple I know are from, some of them are courtesy of Jamie.
Yeah.
And I can kind of speak to them for us.
Okay.
So he's got Seeing Myself in Tearaway. And I don't know, have you played Tearaway yet, Griffin?
No.
Okay. So one of the big hooks of Tearaway, or one of the big things in Tearaway, is that you, as the person playing the game, plays a significant role in the game itself. So the main character of the game is delivering a message to you. And in the beginning of the game, it takes your picture and you show up in the game world. And when the sun is shining, the camera on the PS Vita is taking a picture of your face and it's like showing your face in the sun and you can make faces and stuff. So he was referring to that. Okay. So that's Tearaway.
Yeah.
Music boss battles in Rayman Legends. Mm-hmm. That's also courtesy of Jamie. Bill from The Last of Us is gay.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert, but yep. This is courtesy of me, the Spelunky eggplant run, which I can explain later.
Okay.
The first 2D dungeon exploration in Zelda, which we will touch upon in Game of the Year as well, I think. That's a really good one. Playing as Ellie in The Last of Us, Zelda's Light Arrow, Cat Mario, and Saints Row 4 glitches, you say?
Yeah, I just made Tell that adjust. Well, because I will even start with there, since we have all the contenders laid out. Is there anything else we want to add?
I feel like there could be a bunch more. Nothing is immediately springing to mind, but this is a pretty good list to start out with.
Yeah.
Let's go from here.
Do you think? Okay, so this is where I guess it gets a little tricky. Is do you think that? Yeah, okay. No, I'm okay with this because endings, I think, will be different. I would say, like, hey, you know, the ending of BioShock might fit in here, like going to Rapture.
Yeah, yeah.
But also, I think that's kind of covered in the ending.
Yeah, and I'll throw one more on here and just take it right off. Mm-hmm. Phoenix Wright, again. there's a really cool moment where when you are, like, at a dead end in the case, the character is like, okay, I got to turn this case upside down. And then you literally, in like typical anime fashion, just like the camera zooms in and you go inside the character's brain. And there's a little pulse going across the screen and this awesome music starts playing. And you have to engage in little like mini deductions where you answer multiple choice questions. And
that's
super
really cool.
Yeah, it's awesome.
That sounds great. You should write that down.
Okay, I'm going to put that on there.
Okay, because that sounds... Cool. I'm looking at this list now, and it just kind of looks kind of weak, honestly.
I know. I feel like there's got to be more out there, but I'm just not...
Yeah.
Nothing is immediately popping into my head.
Right, and I think with the ending crossover, like, we just are going to kind of saving some of these moments, because the endings have greater size to them.
Yeah. I agree. It's easy to have a lot of crossover in these two categories. Mm-hmm. So let's stick to some of these kind of small little flourishes, and then we'll go over to the big stuff.
I love it. Okay, so Saints Row 4 glitches is so in the premise of the game is you're playing inside a computer generated world, like a Matrix style, you know, world where you're in a tank and your brain's in a computer. As the game goes on, you're trying to disrupt this location, and there's a level in the game where you're specifically trying to make the game glitch out as hard as possible. And it kind of takes on this like Fez kind of quality where you start wondering to yourself, like, are these glitches that are programmed to be like this, or are these legitimate glitches that are not supposed to be happening. So, you know, and then there's also these microcosms of glitches in the world where you go to like an area where you have to fight some dudes, and instead of it being like your regular enemy types, it's like cars that can only hop, or people whose limbs are just constantly descending or shortening and lengthening, or whose eyeballs are like 15 times the size of their head. it kind of plays tongue in cheek with the glitch thing that was kind of in Saints Row 3, but it's just a lot more prevalent. And then there's like a level where you're doing things in the game to increase the level of glitchedness, and just by the point you get to that, it just everything is on fire. Like the whole game is a glitch. It's all screwed up. But by that time, you're also so super powered, you're just playing like you're so out of reality of that, of like a real like location anyway. It doesn't matter. Like you're leaping around buildings, flying around, shooting fireballs at people. Like, so you've already transcended reality, that now that there's this guy who has like a, you know, who just is like stuck in the ground walking in place. Like that's normal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that sounds awesome. I think that needs to stay on the list.
Okay.
But I'm just adding one more thing that just came
up. Good call.
Okay. There are a lot of really great moments in Divekick. Yeah. I've never seen the foot stomp, so I'm going to leave that out.
Okay, but, I've seen it, so down. You can put it in there.
Okay, I'll put it in there. Okay, so Divekick has some really great moments. There are a few. So one is if you lose 5 matches in a row, there is the fraud detection system, which mm-hmm. sets in actually after you lose your 4th match.
Right.
And if you lose all 5, you're labeled as a fraud.
Which means nothing. But that's part of the charm. Yeah. Like it is purely something that shows up on screen. It doesn't affect you at all. It's just, that's a thing the game does because it's a dick.
You're just a fraud.
Yeah.
Double downs and Divekick are also just legendary. It's the kind of game where it's such a perfect party game because there's so little going on. You know, you just mash 2 buttons, and if you happen to knock each other out at the exact same time, it's just like an amazing feeling.
Right.
What happens if you double down? I can't even remember. Is there anything special that happens?
I think it doesn't count it as anything. Like it's a 0 victory, and you just replay.
Yeah, which I mean, you know, it's kind of standard. But just the Divekick double down is so much more legendary. Oh, yeah. I forgot to even mention the whole conceit of the game is it's a 1-hit KO. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if your first hit is both of you at the exact same elevation, kicking each other at the same time, it's just so epic.
Mm-hmm.
So it's definitely one of the best moments in the game. And I don't even recall what triggers the foot stomp. Can you tell me about that?
I think the foot stomp, because, okay, so if the match timer ends and you if neither one has killed the other one, you have to, whoever is closest to the center of the level, is the victor.
Mm-hmm.
And now I think
if you're both at the exact same distance, then you get stomped.
Yes, so both people get stomped by a giant Monty Python foot.
Yes. I still think the best moment is double down just for the feel of it, because it's so intense.
Right. There's not like a visual gag to it or anything. It's just purely that it happened and that it's so rare.
Yeah, exactly. Just an exhilarating thing.
Yeah.
And I'm cool to keep that on the list for now.
Okay.
If you are.
Yeah. Do we want to take off Bill's reveal as being gay from this list? Because is it missable?
No, it's not missable, actually. Here's the thing about Bill as being revealed as gay. Bill being revealed as gay was an awesome moment for me. I really liked it. I don't know if I would call, if it would be in best moment category. I think it was so understated that it's like one of those things that's like important, but it's not necessarily the thing that left. It doesn't have an emotional punch, obviously, because it's just kind of there. It's like the end goal of what you're, you know, what representation in media is supposed to be.
Yeah.
For people, you know, who are different from the norm. It didn't have an emotional punch, so I'm not sure if it I think it's in a different type of category. It's like one of the more it's like a cool moment.
Yeah, for sure.
Rather than a best moment. So I'm cool with cutting that.
Okay.
Um,
yeah.
And I'll go ahead and quickly just talk up the next item, because I don't think it's going to stay on the list, but I'm just going to tell you what it is, everyone, so you kind of know what I'm talking about and how cool it was. It was a great moment for me. I don't think that enough people like actually saw it for it to be worth it, but I'm referring to the Spelunky eggplant run. And I'm going to have to explain this real quick. It's not too complicated, but basically, so I already talked about how Spelunky, you know, gained prominence this year. You know, the PC scene kind of blew up. Something that was discovered actually last year, there was this item that you can only get under very weird circumstances. You actually have to sacrifice a mystery box, which are these boxes where you just buy them and you break them open and there's some random item inside. But if you buy one, and instead of breaking it open, on the very same level, not you can't take it to the next level. Mm-hmm. So on the very same level, if you sacrifice it at an altar, you get an eggplant. And the game doesn't reward you at all for getting the eggplant. It's just like, hey, you got an eggplant. And it changes the music to this really funky song that's like kind of reminiscent of like an 8-bit track. And it's like really jazzy and cool. And you're like, oh, cool, I got this thing, this purple eggplant thing. And for the longest time, people were like, what do I do with this? Like, if I drop it, it just breaks. Like, if I drop it more than like a foot, it's just gone. Huh. And, you know, what the hell's the point of this thing? It plays music on one level. Great. Somebody was manipulating the code of the game just randomly and found out that if you take the eggplant down to like the ultra secret hidden level, and you throw it at the very last boss, his head turns into a giant eggplant, and the music starts playing again, and then you can just kill him with one hit. So everyone was like, that's awesome, but like, how do we do that? Because in order to get to hell, you have to be holding other crap in your hands, and you can only take one item. You can only take the item you're holding out of the level, so how do you hold the one item and then, you know, take the eggplant with you? So people were like, I don't know how to, I guess like you can only do this in a co-op game. But then the Spelunky community was like, no, we're going to do this in a single-player game. And the way that they did this is like the most complex thing. It involved discovering that the game was glitched such that you could use a penalty item, which is the ball and chain, which gets attached if you blow up altars, to destroy blocks that were previously thought to be unbreakable, which is one part of the puzzle, because you have to die, and if you die, it screws you over usually. That's like part of how you get to hell. You have to die at one point. So they found a way to get around when you have to die. Like, you still have to die, but you can get out of the area you normally get trapped in when you revive. So they exploited a glitch in the game to do that. Then they realized that if you get your NPC, if you get like a hired help, like if you go get a shop that has like a help that you can buy for, you know, some amount of money, then you can buy that and have them hold items. But like, when they hold the item, they'll behave really unpredictably. So like, that was part of the puzzle too. So they had to manage another character and carry that character. And there are all these different little facets that came together. And the end result was like, you have to play the game with a fresh save that allows you to get characters. Like, you know, you can unlock additional characters in that game. So you have to play the game with a fresh save that has a character that hasn't been unlocked yet. Then you go through the game, you do the glitch with the ball and chain, you unlock the character in the level for the first time, and then you give the character the item, and then you go through that, and then you have to make it all the way down to the end of hell. And somebody actually did that this year, and it was like I actually happened to be watching the stream on Twitch, and it was like a really awesome moment for me. I think that's a great moment. It's probably one of my favorite moments of the year, but I'm okay to take it off this list because it is a weird thing. it's something that really only applies to a small group of people. It is a display of amazing skill, but it's a little bit different than everything else on this list, and that it's not something that you would normally encounter in game. It wasn't designed, I guess I would say. It was a feat of, it was a gamer feat, I would say, not so much a moment. So I'm cool to cut it for that reason. That's my two cents on Spelunky eggplants. No more.
I'm intrigued. I'd like to, I want to check it out.
I'll link you to the video. It's like an hour long, though.
Oh, Jesus.
Just to be warned.
Let's see here. What do we have now? Do we take off this?
I think we cut music boss battles in Rayman Legends because Jamie's not here to defend it.
All right. I'm happy with taking the easy shots.
Which sucks, but, you know, what can we do?
Right.
I love a music boss battle as much as the next guy, but it's not the first game with music boss battles.
Yeah.
So it gets to go. Here, I'll go ahead and cut it.
All right. Do we think that... Oh, man. Is Cat Mario one of the best moments of 2013?
I'm going to say cats are always the best moments of everything, but...
Yeah.
But there are lots of Mario suits out there, so I'm cool to cut that.
Okay.
It's not mind-blowing enough.
Okay, and since I've never played the games, and I can't attest to how the cat suit plays, I hear it's really good, and
it's great.
Creates like a level of exploration that you may not normally be used to it in a Mario game. Mm-hmm. So it does have legitimacy beyond just its adorableness.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Great suit, but you know it is a Mario suit, and okay. You know you kind of count on Mario suits to be fun and interesting. So okay. I'm ready to cut that off the list.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
All right, what else can we take off of here? I'm going to go ahead and expand on what is meant by the light arrow.
Okay.
So okay, end of Zelda. You know this is not quite the ending. This is the final boss.
It's actually more like a puzzle, right?
Yeah, the game in typical fashion is like, hey, take a light arrow. And the cool thing about the light arrow in this game is it is the only weapon you can use when you're on the wall. And this kind of, I think we have to tie this in a little bit with the other Zelda thing, but I'll go on. So okay. so it's the only weapon you can use on the wall, and you fight the last boss. And they're like, okay. Sometimes the last boss goes and hides in the wall, and the only way to hurt him is to shoot him with a light arrow. Mm-hmm. So you go in there, and
law of threes applies.
Yes, law of threes applies. You have to hit him three times with light arrows. First time, it's easy. You just shoot him.
Mm-hmm.
Second time, I don't even remember what happens the second time. I think you have to wait for him to try to attack you.
Yeah.
And then you shoot him. And then the third time, you go in there, and you start shooting him, and he's just like this impenetrable wall, and mm-hmm. you're like, what the hell? Like, you just keep shooting, and you wait, and you wait, and no openings ever appear. And then you're like, wait a minute. I'm on a circular wall. I wonder what happens if I just turn around and shoot. Mm-hmm. And you do it, and you're not really expecting much. But then you shoot the arrow, and the game, it takes like 5 seconds to get all the way around. And the game is frozen while you shoot the arrow. So you watch the arrow go all the way around and mm-hmm. hit him in the back. And you're like, whoa, that was awesome.
It was. And it's like a really cool moment of like critical thinking, too, where you're like, there's the tools I have. What do I do with them?
I think it just speaks to how awesome the whole painting thing is in Zelda.
How well realized that 2D mechanic was, just how much they did with it.
Yeah, and I wonder, I don't know if that's like a best moment, but I mean, there's another moment in Zelda which we refer to on this list, and that's when you're in the very first dungeon in the game, and you just get your power, and the first thing you do with it is you go outside the dungeon.
Yep.
And it's like a really awesome, mind-blowing moment where you experience a part of the world that you weren't even thinking about.
Yep.
The
dungeon ceases to be just this block of levels of room, level block of rooms, and now it's a physical location that has a reality on its outside and
exactly.
You know,
it doesn't
form
it no
function.
Longer feels like instanced, you know.
Yep.
And that's a really awesome moment. I think that deserves to stay on our list.
Yeah. Yeah.
So okay, that's not going anywhere yet.
Okay.
Should I cut the light arrow though?
I'm okay with that. I think the light arrow is such a cool little moment that happens. Yeah.
I think I'm okay with kind of folding that in a sense. Like I know that the mind blowing moment in Zelda is leaving the first dungeon.
Yeah.
But I don't want to be redundant and have two moments centered around the 2D motion. So I'm gonna cut the light arrow.
Okay. Yeah, okay. I think it's fine. I think it's covered well enough by just kind of what happens with the 2D nature of that game.
Yeah. Okay, we're getting better here.
All right. So right now we have Seeing Myself in Tearaway, Zelda's first 2D dungeon exploration moment, playing as Ellie, presumably in The Last of Us,
mm-hmm.
Saints Row 4 glitches, Phoenix Wright Brain Times, and Dive Kick Double Down. I'm going to go ahead and take Saints Row 4's glitches off right now.
You're taking that off?
Yeah, I'm going to take it off because I think that you know, as I explained it before, it is really cool, and the game does play with it. It's probably one of the best things that Saints Row 4 does to separate itself from Saints Row 3. But it's so fleeting at some points. Like, you're moving so quickly through the game. Like, you're fighting so many things that you just... Sometimes it's easy to miss them and not really notice. And I think that it was done already in Saints Row 4 when you go into the Deckers Die level and you're programmed as a toilet instead of a person. So you're a toilet running around with a Mega Buster. And that joke as being a glitch, I think, is... It's what obviously started Saints Row 4, but it, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's fair. Okay, so we can go ahead and cut that. I think just by the kind of the same token, I'm going to let the Phoenix Wright thing, even though I think it's really awesome.
It sounds great.
It is really great, but I don't know. I have a hard time saying that it is among the best moments of the year, even though I had a fantastic time with it.
All right.
Going inside someone's brain and doing awesome deductions and having giant words flash on the screens when you figure things out is super cool, but is it as cool as some of this other stuff?
No.
Maybe not.
Maybe not.
Maybe not. So right. I'm cool to let that go.
Okay. I think we are getting close to a list here.
We are getting close. I think the next, unfortunately, obvious target is Tearaway.
Yeah.
Poor guy.
I mean, I didn't play the game. You are going to be the only defender for that right now, which, I mean, you didn't put it on this list, so.
I didn't. Here's the thing about Tearaway. Tearaway is a fantastic little game, and it's worth owning if you got a Vita, and I already said this once, but seeing myself is cool, but, it's cool.
Okay.
It's just cool, but it's not incredible.
Okay.
So it's getting taken away. Okay. No one's here to defend it.
Great. Get it
Stop
out of
being a doctor, Jamie.
All right, so that leaves our list of three as Zelda's 2D dungeon exploration the first time, playing as Ellie in The Last of Us, and Dive Kick Double KO.
Yeah. I think that's a respectable list of three.
Mm-hmm.
And I personally think I'm going to say Ellie is probably the one for me that was the most surprising and the most emotionally compelling, because the whole time you're playing as her, the game fakes you out so good into thinking Joel's dead.
Yep. Yes.
And she's also just a really cool character to play as.
Yeah.
The whole scene with her, it kind of subverts your expectations because she takes care of herself the whole time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, obviously you're doing it, and then, you know, at the end of it, you know, that whole thing happens, but.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Joel kind of comes back and he's still alive and he kind of meets up with her again.
Right.
But I think not until she's done everything.
Right. I think in terms of a singular moment, that part when you are Joel in the laboratory and you fall under the rebar and you're just like struggling to get out of this location.
Yeah.
And then it fades to winter. And then now it fades back up and you're in control of LA. Like, that is just like, you know, goosebumps. And you're like, games are so... Yeah. And then she has all the same abilities as Joel did before, essentially.
Like, did she take them off his dead corpse?
Yeah. Well, yeah, you can... And she has unique things in her backpack than what Joel had, if you read through some of the notes and whatnot.
Yeah, yeah. It's just an incredible moment. And like I said, you know, not only because the game fakes you out and you think like, wow, Joel's dead, but also because, you know, it's this unique experience. Mm-hmm. They're very ballsy about it because Joel doesn't just save her. As I said, you know, she completely takes care of herself. Yeah. Also, you're playing as like a teenage girl. What other games have teenage girls that aren't Japanese?
Right. Non-sexualized female lead.
Tiny women. So yeah, I think that's our winner in this category. As great as the other two are,
they sure are great, but you know what? That was mind-blowing.
Yeah, it's definitely
okay. So best moment of 2013 is playing as Ellie in The Last of Us, or good runners up being Zelda, whatever, you just heard it, and then Dive Kick.
Well done, Dive. Yeah. Sweet.
All right, we're in the home stretch here. Almost end of it. The next category that we have to deal with is going to be another big one. Spoiler heavy, no doubt. We haven't already. Yeah.
Will I protect myself from spoilers for Ni No Kuni?
I don't know. We'll see. I mean, I'm not going to say it. I'm not going to say, no, you have to listen, Jeff, but maybe you want to walk away or something. We'll see here.
just you talk to no one.
Yeah. Okay. So best ending. The list we have is The Last of Us, BioShock Infinite, Zelda, A Link Between Worlds, specifically the
Abbott reveal.
I mean,
yeah, it's probably the best part of the ending.
Because, okay, whatever. We'll talk about that. Saints Row 4, Ni No Kuni, DMC, Devil May Cry, Brothers, A Tale of Bullshit, Everything. Wait. Oh. Yeah. Gone Home.
Everything is Ordinary and Gone Home.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't think that game. I'm going to say right now, I don't think that game's best quality is its ending, but it took some balls to just have an ordinary ending.
Sure did, yeah.
So I think we, even though, of course, it's a great game, and I don't mean to do it any disrespect, I'm cool to let it go already.
Yeah.
I just wanted to say, hey, this is an interesting ending, because nothing much happens.
Yeah, it's real life. Everything is real life, and real life, it's not ghosts or murder. Like, it's just a story.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, I'll quickly talk about Saints Row 4 because I think that needs to go as well. The Saints Row 4 ending essentially starts. It's okay. No, you're not going to play this, right? So
no, don't worry about spoiling.
Okay.
For that.
So Saints Row 4, like I said, you know, you're in a computer. Aliens invade Earth. They capture people and put them in like matrix stasis. You fight against the aliens that are doing this long enough that to make you not do it anymore. They just blow up Earth. And everybody's dead. And that is in the first third of the game. So what makes it so freaking awesome is by the end of it, you've infiltrated like the alien spaceship land and you're falling through with this power armor while they're playing Stan Bush's Stand from Transformers fame. And they're doing Transformers, the movie, the 1986 movie lines back and forth. It's good Saints Row, like, obvious jokes are obvious, but really awesome. It finally ends after this dumb fight, and they say that, God, it's so stupid. They're like, oh wait, he's been capturing people through the entire history of the world, like, since, you know, Beyond Common era. Up to current. And then he's like, they also have discovered time travel, so now you can go anywhere and anytime. And then it's just a monologue that starts happening by a lady who's talking about how the Saints like went back and like relived parts of history, and they were doing all these amazing things, like going to different locations in time and space and reality, and but it's all just spoken to you. And then it turns out that it's Jane Eyre narrating to you. And then throughout the course of the game, all the characters are always constantly saying, fuck Jane Eyre. So by the end of this, Jane Eyre has narrated the entire story of the world blowing up, being rescued by the Saints going back in time and re-saving everybody and re-establishing themselves in history. And then it is just a dance scene, like a breakdance line of all the characters in it doing various stereotypical breakdance moves to songs.
That sounds great.
And then it's
great. Why is it not the best ending of the year?
It's great, but it takes a lot of setup. Dance sequence is the worst.
All right. I trust you on that.
Yeah. I guess it's also more interesting because if they do ever do a Saints Row game, now it's like the gloves are off in so many. Like, before it was, okay, we don't have to listen to the rules of reality and open world gameplay design. Now we don't need to listen to the rules of any kind of logic whatsoever.
That sounds fantastic.
Yeah.
Okay, so you're cool to cut that. I haven't played it, so I don't have any strong opinion either way.
All right. Let's talk about Devil May Cry here, too, because I don't think this fits with these other guys. I'm going to cut it right now, just to get that done with.
Okay.
But Devil May Cry, the ending is really good. I mean, if you don't If you're not familiar with the Devil May Cry series, then it may have a little less relevance. But so you're playing the game. It's interesting. You encounter Virgil, who's Dante's half-brother or brother or whatever. I don't really remember. And he's working alongside of you. You work together. Like, he was part of this resistance to the demon empire, and you're trying to take down this head demon dude. So the end boss battle is just this epic, stupid fight where you're fighting this giant, you know, monster that's humongous, and you're not using any of your abilities that you've really been learning in the, like, combat. So you're just kind of traversing around these platforms, taking pot shots at him, and then, you know, depleting his life bar and going through these sequences. It's just, it's like, it's an end boss battle of, like, PlayStation 2 era, where you're like, oh great, I just went through these sequence events that are completely different from anything I've done in the game so far.
It's grand. It's one of those.
Yeah, it's grand, it's big, it's exciting, and like, it has some of the tools that you've used, but it's never challenging you in a way that you've learned to play the game yet.
Okay.
So you get done, you dethrone this evil demon king man, and you're standing there, and it's a cutscene with you and Dante and Virgil and this girl named Kat, who's like, I think she's a human, I think.
Yeah, I know at least that much about her.
Yeah. So they're standing over this landscape, and Dante and Virgil are talking, and they're saying, like, well, great, what do we do now? And, you know, Virgil turns to Dante and says, like, well, we rebuild, and then we control it for ourselves. So we can usher in a greater, like, we can take care of the humans by controlling them. And Dante's like, wait. Didn't we just do this whole thing to free humans from the tyrannical rule of this demon world? Like, who are we to go do this? And then Virgil says, okay, if that's how you're going to be, then I disagree. And then you fight, and you have the real last boss fight, which is you're fighting Virgil, and it's you're fighting essentially like a carbon copy of yourself that has
Dark Link.
I shouldn't say carbon copy. It's like, it's the same kind of a move set that you would have, where he has a diversity of weapons and attacks that all do different things, but they are different. Like, it's but you're fighting another Dante that has a different move set, and it's so cool, and it's so challenging, and you,
like, Bizarro Dante basically.
Yeah. It's, you know, it's good. It's like that moment you've been waiting to happen all along, and then they make good on it, and it's interesting. It's not just like, I'm a bad guy now. Like, it's different ideologies, and it makes sense. And then the fight is a really good, like, how a real last boss fight should be. It's not gimmicky. It's like, okay, you've been playing this fighting action game this long, you should be good at this by now. Let's see what you got.
Now let's test the extent of your skills. That sounds pretty sweet.
It is. It's so good.
It could almost go in the moment category, though, because it's like the last boss, not the... It's hard to separate these as a problem.
Yeah, it's just, I think that it's the build-up of that moment of having that really bad last boss fight that you're like, okay, and just kind of the culmination of that story and that ideology that butt heads. And I think that actual fight itself is not good.
Interesting. But, okay,
like, there are flaws in it that I think that it works better as a whole than as a very small moment.
I see. I gotcha. Okay. All right, well, we've cut that off. You feel it maybe doesn't stand with the rest of these. I'm going to talk about A Link Between Worlds, and then I'm not sure whether it stays or not, but I'm going to go ahead and talk about it.
So
the ending's kind of, you know, it's one of those big reveal moments. You know, it's for the most part, it's kind of a generic thing. I mean, you're going through, you go to Lohrule, you meet the other princess named Hilda, and she's like, hey, like, the moment you meet her, you get attacked by the villain of the game. And she's like, hold on, I'm going to hold them off. You go get these 7 crystals. And you're like, all right, I just met you, but sure, why not? So you go, you get the 7 crystals, and then you go back, and Hilda's like, oh, guess what? I'm actually evil. And you're like, oh, I totally should have seen it coming.
Yeah.
And that's pretty normal.
Yeah, it wasn't that black. Like, it wasn't that.
No. It's actually, I mean, she has motivations, which is actually giving a lot of credit to Nintendo, because oftentimes the villains don't have any motivations at all. But her motivations are basically, we lost our Triforce, I want yours.
Yeah.
So turns out she's a villain, and you're like, okay. And then you fight the last boss, and, you know, the last boss is a form of Ganon, mixed with Yuga, and I think also mixed with her. It's a whole bunch of mixing.
Yeah.
And that's cool. And you kill it. And then you go and you rush to, like, you – I don't remember exactly what happens. I guess you, like, you rush over to – is it to Zelda?
I believe, what? Yeah. You unpaint her from the wall using your magic wrist bracelet or whatever.
I'm just trying to remember what sets up this reveal, because do you remember why it is that this happens? That Nabbit shows up?
Not really. Okay, I think, well, it's just like, it's about time. And also, how does he get there is another question.
He just runs, as far as I recall.
But aren't you in Lorule at that time?
You're in, like, the Sacred Realm or something. So Nabbit can go between, I think, can't he?
I thought that's what the bracelet's purpose was.
Yeah, but that's not entirely explained. Okay. Well, okay. So the big reveal that happens is somehow you are in turmoil. And then lo and behold, Nabbit shows up and you're like, Nabbit, what the hell are you doing here? You're just that idiot who sold me shit and is kind of a coward and is kind of a goofball. Right. And the whole time the game has kind of been like kind of planting this idea, like, that the people whom you meet in Lorule are kind of like bizarre versions of the normal people in the world. Like, they have different personalities. Mm-hmm. Hilda is to Zelda. She's like the more corrupted version of Zelda, maybe a little bit more jealous, more greedy.
Well, yeah. It's more of just like she'll protect at any cost, and any cost means hurting others, which is kind of like,
I mean, she's not a horrible person, but she's different. Her personality is different than Zelda's, I would say.
Yeah.
Obviously, so you have this knowledge, and then Nabbit shows up, and Nabbit, you haven't really thought much about who Nabbit is. He's just this idiot bunny
who sells the Zelda items that you're like, that's weird that you have all those. Okay.
Yeah. But then he pulls his mask off, and it's like, I don't even remember the guy's name, but it is Link from the other world. And it's such a weird moment, because, like, you never think about, like, I never thought to myself, like, oh, Link must have some alternate persona in this world. Mm-hmm. I was just like, oh, it's Link. The rules don't apply to him.
Right.
But then, here he is. And it's so cool, because, like, they've already set up the idea that the personalities of your counterpart are very different. Mm-hmm. So Link being courageous and Nabbit being a coward, those two things go together so well, but you just would never think of it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's definitely like a wow moment, and it's really cool. But other than that big reveal, which is a cool reveal, definitely, right. I'm not sure that ending offers anything really like magical or special.
Nope. I think the coolest thing about it is the promise, or again, like maybe taking that in an interesting direction in another Zelda game.
Yeah. And, since this is Nintendo, I mean,
that'll never happen.
Who are we kidding?
Yeah, exactly.
So I'm going to go ahead and strike that off the list.
Cool. Great.
I think we have our three now, don't we?
We have The Last of Us, Bioshock Infinite, Ni No Kuni, and Brothers.
Okay, so we need to get rid of one more. Okay, I think this is the time where we have to delicately discuss Ni No Kuni.
Mm-hmm. Or we could just cut Brothers. Yeah. Yeah.
I think Brothers has a place on this list.
I think that... What do you define as the ending of Brothers? What ends Brothers?
I guess I'm talking about the climax of Brothers, which is a bit of cheating.
Okay.
I don't know. It's hard to say.
So the ending you're saying is like the point from the brother's death to the end of the game, when you're pulling that trigger using, your brother's memories or whatever to propel yourself into the final moment of the win state of the game.
Yeah. So spoilers, your brother dies.
No surprise.
I don't know. It just... What's that?
I said no surprise there.
I wasn't expecting it because I'm a dumb. I mean, look, how much of an impact this ending has is going to depend upon how much you decide to kind of read into the foreshadowing of the story. And it sounds like it was pretty heavy. I didn't pick up on it. Usually I tend to pick up on these things, but I happened to miss this one. But it is pretty heavy foreshadowing. It definitely packs an emotional punch, though. Like, I felt for that kid. I felt real bad.
Okay.
Brother died.
If you want to say that the best thing about... Well, if Brothers... if Brothers was designed initially for this moment and this moment alone, and that everything else in the game is just building up to this gimmick finally having like its reveal of like, haha, now you need to do the thing you've been doing all along to make just one guy go. Like, if
mechanically, it's not that interesting. I mean, obviously, you know, just, I mean, Griffin's referring to this thing where your brother's dead and you're like, oh shit, it's really sad. And then you're mourning, and then this bird takes you home and you get home, and the whole game has been like, you know, there's been a whole bunch of scenes where the younger brother has been unable to swim. And so the first thing that happens, of course, is there's a huge like gulf of water you have to cross. Mm-hmm. So you get in there and like you hear your brother talking to you. And it turns out if you use your brother's action button, you can swim. Yeah. And, you know, it's more symbolic than it is an interesting mechanic. Obviously, you know, it's not really any more fun to press two triggers instead of one to swim. But I think, again, it struck me and it moved me emotionally, and you know that's the reason why I think it's on this list for me. And I think that's one of the strongest points. I mean, look, I really like the game, but I think the ending is probably the most one of the strongest points in the game.
Okay, so I can get you. I can get that, because now I'm thinking about what the narrative, or not the narrative, but the story ending, where it's the father standing at the son's grave and just like losing it, and then the younger brother just like standing there stoically. And I think that that's very moving.
Yeah, great parallel to the beginning too. You know, standing at one grave, then standing at two graves.
Right. Yeah. Okay, so, I'm okay with it. Let's cut Nino Kuni.
Okay, we won't have to talk about it then.
Yeah, I mean, Nino Kuni deserves to be on this list. I think that it's a Miyazaki film, so. It's got an ending that you can probably guess has something to do with magic or whatever. And it, you know, may not be, it's going to be a happy ending. It's really good.
Sweet. So I know what I want to be the winner.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's the game that I don't want to win other things.
Oh, so Bioshock Infinite is what you're saying?
I would if you agree, I would defer to BioShock Infinite as the winner of this game or of this category.
Yeah, I think so.
Because I think that was one of the strongest points of that game. I think that the ending, it was the biggest. It was a total mindfuck. I mean, you know, it's just like, look, it was so meta. Mm-hmm. I mean, how else to describe it?
Yeah, to approach game design in the ending of your game and kind of critique it and annualization. It reminds me of like Metal Gear Solid 4's returning to Shadow Moses moment, where it's becomes this meta commentary on video game design that's still really cool in its own story.
Yeah, and it even is like kind of making fun of the game, where it's like, do you really want another BioShock? Like, mm-hmm. come on. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Do you want the same elements again?
Yeah.
Right. As it turned out, I did not.
Right.
But I think, I mean, obviously The Last of Us, you know, we talked about the writing in that game. It's stellar. And it has a very challenging ending. It has a very, I think, maturely executed ending. It's a very abrupt ending too, because you know the last thing you do is climb up a ledge and then the game ends. I respect it, and I think it's great. I think that again, the biggest mindfuck though is BioShock, and the most out of left field and interesting is going to be BioShock.
Yeah.
So go ahead.
I was going to say, I think that the Last of Us, like not the ending of the question, but the moment before that, when Joel makes, when you learn that you're no longer, or that you are playing somebody's story, you're not playing choose your adventure, like when that happens and you make that decision with Ellie, or when Joel makes that decision with Ellie, that's when it, I think that's what I consider the most interesting part of the ending.
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, I'm just kind of being silly about the ending being, you know, this abrupt climbing up the ledge. I mean, obviously, yes, the climactic moment, you know, Joel breaks out of the hospital, saves Ellie essentially against her wish, you know, kills
countless people.
I can't remember the name of the woman whom he kills, but yeah, kills tons of people, really does a bad thing. You know, Ellie's kind of lost her innocence. She's like, you know, I can't really trust Joel anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, really challenging ending. you know, great from like a literary perspective.
Yeah.
You know, great, great ending. You know, definite runner up.
Yep. Extremely well acted.
Yeah, definitely. You know, it fits within the conventional ideas of what you would expect an ending to be. Mm-hmm. I would say BioShock is more left field, and that's why I think it gets the nod here, because it's something that you would not expect at all. I mean, yeah, you kind of go in there expecting your mind to be blown, but it kind of goes beyond, it goes outside of the narrative, and it's this kind of meta approach, which I think is what makes it deserve number one here.
Yep.
For sure. So hey, I think BioShock's number one at something.
It's being done. Best ending goes to BioShock Infinite, followed up by The Last of Us and Brothers: A Tale of Two Sons.
I like that. I'm happy with the way that went.
Sure,
sweet.
That's fine.
Hey, we only have two more categories left.
Yay! This I think should be pretty easy, right? The best trend of 2013. So you know, talk about good things that happened in 2013. There was a lot of them. We have this list here. We have Nintendo embracing online and everything that comes along with that. Frequent online digital sales, indie love, free game service, Kickstarter successes, Year of Luigi, game streaming, live racers in games, complete dominance of roguelike likes, and boat wars with a Z.
I think we have a couple easy cuts in here.
Yep. Okay.
Year of Luigi. I love Luigi, probably one of my favorite Nintendo characters, but it didn't deliver. The Year of Luigi did not deliver on all the Luigi I expected.
Mm-hmm.
Although I have not yet played Dr. Luigi.
Yeah, I hear it's more Luigi. I'm just going to cut like crazy here. Boat Wars is off this list because I'm not really certain why that's on here.
There's some boats. A couple games with boats, I guess. There was a Jamie contribution. He's not here to defend it. So
Assassin's Creed 4 had some awesome boat mechanics in it. And well realized, yep. Complete dominance of roguelike likes. I don't know if that's a good thing.
There will never be enough roguelikes.
Okay.
So that just has to go away.
Sure. I was going to say, I think the roguelike and roguelike is great, but I don't think that's a great trend.
Tell me, what's live racers in games? You talking about Austin Games? Done quick?
Yeah. I think we can. I think we can
meld that into game streaming.
Exactly. Yep. Because I think game streaming is made better. Well, I think they both go hand in hand. But I'm just going to actually delete this because I think that it is a part of game streaming.
Yeah. I was going to say one of the dudes I watch is a Spelunky speedrunner. Mm-hmm. So there you go. Also, you know, Cosmos doing the Wind Waker run, the Super Mario 64 any percent run, you know, all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Cool. I'm going to say right now, game streaming is a strong contender for me.
Yeah, I agree.
So that stays.
That stays.
We'll come back to it.
All right. I'm going to put it in pink right now. Okay, whatever. No, I'm not.
Yeah, by all means.
No, it's fine. Free game service. I think this is a cool trend that happened this year. Like you have.
Did it happen this year or did it happen?
That's, tell me one. Yeah, I think where the contention comes is, you know, PlayStation Plus was not this year. Was it 2012? 2011?
Yeah, 2012, yeah.
So that's where your subscription nets you free video games. Xbox did this as well this year, where they launched some free game services with like downloadable content or downloadable games, old games. But it was never really done as well as PlayStation. Like they're really old games that, you know, don't really have any value anymore.
I mean, we could keep this if we can argue that in 2013, you know, some significant progress or maybe the full realization or the full,
I think,
you know,
best,
whatever.
The best argument for it is in 2013, more people are doing this. Like you have free game, like good old games, giving away games for free. You have
the Humble Bundle, you know, is really fully established. Yeah, I think there's a lot of avenues for that right now. So it's something that. I wasn't even going to cut it yet because I see so many other potential cuts that I was actually going to leave it on the list.
Well, I think I'm cutting it because I think it just it's a cool burgeoning trend. It just hasn't been like there needs to be more still.
We don't have our Netflix yet, I guess is what you're saying.
Yeah, essentially. Like, hey, maybe maybe some in some future world of 2014, you know, a Sony company will announce some sort of streaming service for games or something like that.
Yeah, probably. It could happen. PlayStation Now.
Yeah, let's call it back.
It might happen right PlayStation Now. Okay.
Okay.
Kickstarter successes, I'm going to say Broken Age just makes that not on there.
There, it's good that there are things that things are happening. Like, you know, we haven't seen anything hit the toilet yet. Yeah. Where it's like, oh, I guess we can't make the game. All your money's gone. Sorry, and we can't do it. So, whoops.
Yeah, I mean, there've been a couple failures that have gotten some press coverage. Nothing huge, though.
Right, right.
Nobody ran away with $2 million yet.
Right, 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 right. So I think that's fine to take that off, since, you know, there are some issues that are still lingering about Kickstarter, and we haven't seen as many successes as we should have.
Yeah, I think we can talk about Kickstarter when it first emerged, mm-hmm. Which wasn't this year, and we can talk about it if, you know, it's having like a banner year. I wouldn't say this was a banner year. I mean, Kickstarter's been all over the place this year.
Yeah.
I think maybe if we want to see if Kickstarter and just people doing Kickstarters as a trend for this year, then yes. There have been a lot of Kickstarters this year. But, you know, successes, I would hesitate.
Okay.
Yeah. So, okay, what does that leave us with?
That leaves us with Nintendo embracing online, frequent online digital sales, indie love, and game streaming.
Okay. Talk up the frequent online digital sales.
Okay, well, obviously everybody knows about Steam sale. Steam's, you know, I'm not even going to go into describing that, but it's cool that everybody else is doing that now.
It is true. Everyone else is doing that now.
Like, you've got Steam-like sales with gamification of buying shit on good old games. I mean, you have, like, online digital blowouts on... even Nintendo product, like Nintendo's eShop, is having discount times and sales on stuff. And PlayStation, you know, with PlayStation Plus was already doing it, but now even more so, like just having like random sales where they're discounting digital products. Like, and I don't know if Microsoft's doing that, honestly. I think they're still trying to.
they're still on the blocking used games. They're still trying to figure out how they can sneak that back in.
So it's not. What I think is really interesting is how widespread it's become.
Yeah, and here's the question. I mean, I think indie love stays, personally, mm-hmm. because that's been a big theme of the year. Indie has kind of blown up.
Yeah.
It's almost become oversaturated by this point. So I think that stays.
Right.
I think we're comparing Nintendo and their online efforts to what's going on with sales and, you know, more creative methods of distributing games. So so which of those is the more compelling, I think, is the question we're asking.
Mm-hmm.
And what are your thoughts? Just kind of first look here.
I think that frequent digital sale frequent online digital sales is more compelling. It's more interesting. It's more beneficial to the consumers.
Yeah.
It's all around a good thing that really has no drawbacks whatsoever.
Yeah.
Whereas Nintendo, you have, like, it's great that they're finally kind of stepping up to the plate that a lot of other companies have been dealing with already. And hey, maybe they're not doing it as perfectly as they should, but it's great that they're getting in there.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, look, I mean, when I think of what you're talking about here, I'm thinking of like the Nintendo Direct, just kind of different ways of communicating with consumers and stuff like that. And that's cool. And look, you know, you got Pokemon that has an infrastructure, an actual like network infrastructure to work with, which is great.
Right. You got gobs of downloadable content from Fire Emblem Awakening.
Yeah. Yeah. So you know, they're putting their foot in the water, but are they there where they need to be yet?
Right.
Not really. I mean, you know, they still need to keep working on those Nintendo Directs.
Still friend codes.
Nintendo Network IDs.
Yeah, whatever that means.
Almost.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's a good step, but I think I'm cool with taking that off the list.
Okay, great. I like that too.
Yeah. And I'm going to say it seems to me, just in terms of like the biggest thing of the year, I think for me, game streaming would be that thing.
Deal. I'm done.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, look at how many of the people you know in like the game journalism world have gotten on Twitch. I mean, I can watch, you know, one of 10 personalities on Twitch, like any given week. And, you know, forget about all the people who've gotten their start on YouTube or who got their start on Twitch. You know, these people are making money. These people are contributing to the community. These people are doing things that just were never done before. It's it's a very, it's a brave new world for gaming. And it's like this more connected world where there's just so much more going on. And, you know, Twitch and I guess
the ease of use that it, that comes along with it now, too, is really remarkable.
So, yeah, that's I think that's been the most transformative thing. It really has blown up this year. I mean, I remember watching, you know, Justin TV streams back in 2010, but it's just nothing like this.
Right. So it's this is not just StarCraft and fighting games anymore. Like, it's for real.
Anyone can do it. You can do it on your next gen console.
Yeah.
So
I'm doing it right now. No, I'm not.
don't molest your drunken
you can do anything you want
as long as it's not in the PlayStation playroom.
Well, you got to work out the bugs, you know.
But it, that's I mean, that's the big thing I think for this year. That's 2013 is the year of the game streamers. So okay, sweet,
great,
we did it
right. And you know, hey, indie is on this list for a reason, because indie has kind of transformed in its own right now, where it's no longer the like one dude cooking up something for the PC. Like, it kind of has found its own place.
Yeah, no longer are you going to have like movies made about the dude who made Braid. You know, John Blow is not going to be the subject of a documentary, because you know what, there's eight other John Blows,
right? And they're all being paid by Sony or Microsoft or whatever publisher they're working with, because indie has like lost any meaning, because people care about them now.
Yeah, look at how eager both Microsoft and Sony were to communicate with the Joe Dendier guys when they showed off No Man's Sky.
Yep,
they were chomping at the bit for that game.
Yep.
So yeah, so definitely there's a reason that's on there. I think, as I said, you know, the market has almost become oversaturated with indies. It is a big deal now, and Steam Greenlight blowing up. So yeah, cool. And,
All right. Perfect. Last category, which has had a sudden change of category name and entries since last I read it. The final category we have here is most anticipated game of 2014. Used to be game we didn't play of 2013. So I guess it's still the same thing, just different entries. Different,
I'm going to add one more entry, which I really think will make you happy.
Okay, so the list stands as The Witness, Infamous Second Son, Titanfall, Watch Dogs, X, Bravely Default, Flying Fairy, Valkyria 3 Fan Translation, and The Last Guardian. Please believe. Yeah, and just kidding on The Last Guardian, because there's no confirmation of that thing being real.
That's never coming out.
No.
also, I'm just going to say X is probably never coming out, even though I want that game so bad.
If you're saying X represents a good Xeno property to happen again, then yeah, I would like
I mean, it's the Xenoblade sequel. So.
Well, yeah.
Looks great. Sure, I want to get in a mech and fly around the world.
Yeah, me too. The transforming mechs, I love it.
Jesus, yes.
I just there's not enough there to assume that it's coming out in 2014.
No, there's no way. Yeah. I don't even believe it's possible.
Right. I mean, for everything you could say, well, something will happen and it may not come out, but I think that there's been so little shown of X that it's a lot of just hopes at the moment.
Yeah, so it's hard for me to say.
Yeah.
Titanfall. I don't care about Titanfall.
Okay.
Don't tell anyone.
Okay. I think Titanfall is the most interesting game on this list.
Okay. Then maybe it needs to stay.
Okay.
Because there are a lot of games on this list, but it's questionable.
Once again, invoking Jamie's absentee rule.
It's also already been released, so he's wrong.
Yeah, Valkyria 3 fan translation is not our most anticipated game of 2014.
I'd be interested in playing it, but it's out already, so too bad. I will say I just spent $55 on the Bravely Default Flying Fairy collector's edition because I'm a Dumbo.
I'm okay with leaving that for the time being, at the very least.
Okay.
I think we got some interesting ones here. So if we're not touching that or Titanfall at the moment, we can look at Watch Dogs, Second Son, and then The Witness.
So, okay. Has Watch Dogs been shown too much?
Not
has
since
the hype died?
Well, I mean, it was supposed to come out in 2013.
Yeah.
And then it suddenly wasn't.
Yeah, I feel like it should stay for that reason.
I mean, I think it's the most... It was the thing that you know, it was going to be my go-to day one game for the PlayStation 4 to play. It seems like the most interesting thing that was out there at the time.
Yeah.
But now, like, I don't think I don't have any ill will towards it. Like, mm-hmm. I think that it just, you know, I'm worried, you know?
It missed the hype window. I mean, I don't know. It's definitely kind of quieted down a bit.
Right. And if you're saying, like, which Ubisoft property in which you're playing with more people than you initially think you're playing with, I think that... that other game they have, the District, is that right?
Oh yeah, the District. Yeah.
Yeah, that is a more interesting game to me than Watch Dogs.
Well, I definitely rather play Watch Dogs. If you can make I don't really care that much about Second Son. Mm-hmm. I know that's a property you're interested in. I don't know. Do you think that's something that should stay? Make the case for Second Son.
I can't.
If there is one to
no,
be made.
I don't
can't.
Think because. I think I liked Infamous 2. I don't know enough about Infamous Second Son.
Also, like, why isn't No Man's Sky on this list?
Well, because I don't think it's that great.
Okay, that's fair. That's very fair.
But. Hey, it's Minecraft. It's yet another procedurally generated game with an art style.
Yeah, but it's going to be cool.
Is it?
Like, we don't know. I that's one of my most anticipated, but I will accept that it doesn't need to stay on this list.
Okay. I mean, I think that it just doesn't do enough unique to merit it being on that list.
Well, the other thing to say is we haven't seen enough.
Right.
We've seen, you know, some in-engine footage, some things that look really ambitious and grandiose. We don't know. We don't know yet exactly what that means.
Yeah. I don't know why I didn't put Metal Gear Solid on here, but
Ground Zeroes, that on there. That makes things a little more interesting.
Yeah, I'm gonna take off Watch Dogs and just put on Ground Zeroes at that point because that's better.
Okay, I'm gonna make the case that Witness goes next because I've watched some gameplay videos of that game.
You know, you make a good point. I was thinking the Witness was gonna win, but after you said that. Now I agree.
I watched some gameplay videos and it looked okay. I loved Braid. I didn't really think the story added very much to it. I thought it was a great platformer. Mm-hmm. This looks like less my scene. It looks like it'll be fun, but I'm not anticipating it at all.
Yeah, I don't know. I look at it and I don't know if it's gonna be fun. Like, I think it's gonna look beautiful and be interesting, but there's never been a moment when I've watched that game being played that I'm like, well, this looks like fun.
So here's the question. Okay, Bravely Default, I understand we're not gonna let that win, for various reasons. I might be one of my most anticipated. It's not ever once.
Okay, so 2000 we have it right now as most anticipated games of 2014 is Titanfall, the late entry of Metal Gear whatever, Ground Zeroes. And then Bravely Default, Flying Fairy.
So those are our top three. Mm-hmm. I think Bravely Default doesn't win number one. We're going to have a grudge, or not a grudge match. Fight at the... Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, can I just justify that Bravely Default being, like, I'll give it a little
give
nudge.
It a little love?
Yeah, saying that it already came out, and it's fully playable in English.
What do you mean?
Like, the Japanese version, or there was a European version that was released already. That's
out already, yes. Yeah. And look, the game's been doing, it's been getting, you know, good reviews among people who like RPGs. I think it's just kind of performed well overall. Mm-hmm. It's, by all accounts, it's supposed to be, you know, the best Final Fantasy in years. It's got some job classes and some turn-based combat. And if you like those things, it's supposed to revitalize both of them. And that's awesome. Mm-hmm. I will say that I don't think I don't think a project. And the other thing that's great about it, of course, is that they took a long time to localize it, so everyone's really excited that it got localized. Mm-hmm. I don't think a project like that could ever generate the kind of hype that Titanfall or Ground Zeroes could. Mm-hmm. So I don't think that it can ever be called the most anticipated, even if it is maybe one of my more anticipated titles of the year, personally.
Right.
I'm just going to have to kind of defer to the masses on this a little bit. Right. So I'm willing to put that in the runner-up status.
Okay.
So there's no problem there. Nope. And I think the next question is, when you pit Titanfall against Ground Zeroes, so here's the thing. Obviously I'm more excited for Ground Zeroes than Titanfall, but Ground Zeroes is not a full game.
Right. I think this is where we fall in a lot. There's going to be a lot of technicalities here.
Yeah. So what do you think between those two? What are your thoughts?
Let me say, I think that Titanfall is going to be the most interesting game of 2014 because of what it's going to be doing. Like, its emphasis on multiplayer only game design. It's kind of amping the shooter into a new level of traversal and tactics with the mech design, and it just seems really freaking cool, like, to me, like jumping out of the mechs, shooting around, all that stuff seems really fun. It's just I know that kind of a game, like that first person shooter that's multiplayer competitive sort of thing, I know isn't going to last with me for a long time, and I know I'll probably get bored with it, and I'd rather have that sort of thing put into a single player experience. But I think that that game is going to do things this year that are going to equate to, like, the Modern Warfare 4 of the last gen.
Yeah, and I think I would try to argue with you for Metal Gear, for Ground Zeroes, if it were not Ground Zeroes, but it were Phantom Pain.
Agreed.
But the problem is, we both already know that Ground Zeroes is going to be a small-ass game. Like, possibly one mission small.
Maybe.
And maybe. We're not sure. But I mean, it's going to be, a high-priced game that Kojima has already gone on record as saying that Phantom Pain will be, like, hundreds of times bigger or something. Mm-hmm. So we kind of are already keeping our expectations in check here. So I think if it were Metal Gear Solid 5 launching next year, it would be a more interesting fight. But I think just kind of on the technicality, we got to give this to Titanfall. Even if it's not the genre I care about as much, you've made some good points about how it could really transform. It could be a kind of a clue as to what next generation gaming looks like. And also, it's a full game, and MGS Ground Zeroes is not.
Okay, I was also going to say that we can just say it's Metal Gear Ground Zeroes because it's our, like, though Titanfall academically is the correct choice, and Bravely Default is, like, the 100%, like, heartfelt nostalgia choice.
Yeah.
I think MGS, is just purely, hey, I'm ready for another Metal Gear Solid game, even if it is a glorified demo. I want to play some next
tanker all over again.
Yeah, I'm okay with that, and I think I'm okay with that.
Okay, well, I'm going to defer to you. My choice among those two is Ground Zeroes for my personal choice.
Yeah,
academically, I think Titanfall is better.
Okay,
I will let you be the deciding factor on which one gets it.
Right, I agree 100%. I think that MGS it appeals more to me. It's a single player game. That is essentially ushering in, the next real Metal Gear Solid game. I think it speaks more to me than Titanfall does. And I think Titanfall is going to be an interesting game, but I think that,
it's not the one we're anticipating.
Yeah. It's not my choice.
Yeah. It's the one to watch, but it's not the one we like best. Mm-hmm. And that's what we have to go with.
Yeah.
In the end, I guess.
Yeah.
Thanks for helping me clear that up.
Yeah.
So Ground Zeroes wins it. Titanfall and Bravely Default take runner-up, both with different types of justifications.
For sure.
Sweet.
That's
hey,
it.
We did it.
Games are over. Games it's start over. Again.
Yes. So we made it through the other categories of Game of the Year. And if you're still listening, if you haven't died by now, then...
Stay
I guess
tuned
tune in
for the next.
Yes, tune in for the next installment, which will be the big one, Game of the Year for 2013.
Yeah. And it's a big one, baby.
It is a big one. I think Jamie will be back for that, so you can look forward to that.
Yes. I think
three-man
right.
combat.
Okay. Thanks for listening. And this has been Boss Barrel Raider or whatever.
Yep.
All right. Bye, Jeff. Bye.